Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome to NLA's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 22nd, 2014. And as usual, we'll start off with some Bible reading. Today we're going to read in Isaiah chapter 9 particularly, but we'll back up a verse or two into Isaiah 8 and verse 20. And if the people speak not according to this word, if it is because there is no light in them, it is because there is no light in them, and they shall pass through it hardly bested and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and their God and look upward. And they shall look into the earth, onto the earth, and behold trouble and darkness, dimness or and anguish, and they shall be driven to darkness. Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in her vexation, when at first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievously afflict her by the way of the sea beyond Jordan in Galilee of the nations. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath a light shined. Thou hast multiplied the nations, and not increased the joy. They joy before thee according to the joy in harvest, and as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For thou hast broken the yoke of his burden, and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, as the day of Midian. For every battle of the warrior is with confused noise, and garments rolled in blood. But this shall be with burning and fuel of fire. For unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth ever forever. The zeal of Jehovah of hosts will perform this. And so he had. And of course that is the Christmas message, and we are just 2 days away from that celebration. I'd like to read something that I had read in a book, The Making of America, and it's really a good book. Everyone should really get a hold of this book. You can get it through the, what's the name of that group over there, Gerard, that sells the constitutional booklets? Let me see if I can grab one and get the name over there.
Constitutional Preservation,
was it? CC something.
Society for the Preservation of Constitution. I don't know. I got to do
it. That wasn't it. But I'll get it and we'll talk about it later. Oh, yeah, here it is. Okay. I usually have one of these on my desk somewhere. So, okay, NCCS.net, which I think is, the National Constitution. Let me go to the front of the book. I think they give us the words. Yeah, the National Center for Constitutional Studies. So anybody who wants to buy constitutional handbooks, these are very cheap. They buy them by the millions, and so they're able to really sell them very cheap. I bought a box of 1,000 a while back, and they last quite some time. I mean, 1,000 is quite a lot, and I always try to give them out along with the jurist handbooks. And you can go up to their website and get these booklets. You can order them online, or you can even call them. But their website is nccs.net. That's ncharliecharliesam.net. And you'll find their phone number on the website if you want to call them. But anyway, they sell quite a few good books up there, and they sell the 5,000-year leap. We, by the way, do have a copy of that on our website, and it's part of our civics course. But there is a book out that is called The Making of America, and it's really a great book, and everyone should read it. It gives a lot of insight on the Founding Fathers and their beliefs and a lot of their thinking. You know, we have autobiographies of Jefferson, and I believe we also have Franklin up on our website. We got quite a few biographies, but we got a few of them that are, you know, they wrote themselves. But here I'd like to read something. It's in the beginning of the book on page 32, and where this discussion is about the founders revealing the source of the ancient principles and their ideas and thoughts on the creating of a nation and the Great Seal. Of course, we know that the Great Seal that we ended up with quite some time after this conversation and decision-making and trying to work towards the seal, some years later, they ended up with the pyramid and the all-seeing eye. So it tells us quite that we've been really infiltrated from the very beginning. But anyway, we read here on page 32. Let's see how far I'm going to read into this. We'll read a few paragraphs. A short time after the Declaration of Independence was adopted, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin were assigned to formulate an official seal for the new nation. As mentioned earlier, Jefferson and several of the other founders, including the Reverend Thomas Hooker, who wrote the Constitution for Connecticut in 1649, had discovered that the most substantive principles of representative government were those practiced by ancient Israel under the leadership of Moses. Jefferson had also studied the institutes of government of the Anglo-Saxons and found that they were almost identical to those of the Israelites. After a brief discussion, it was decided that both of these ancient peoples should be represented on the Great Seal of the United States. Here is Franklin's description of the way he thought ancient Israel should be portrayed. Moses standing on the shore and extending his hand over the sea, thereby causing the same to overwhelm Pharaoh, who was sitting in an open chariot, a crown on his head, and a sword in his hand, raised from a pillar of fire in the clouds, reaching to Moses to express that he acts by command of the deity. The motto, rebellion to tyrants, is obedience to God. So that was the idea of a great seal that Benjamin Franklin thought might be appropriate, and he wanted to put on that motto, rebellion to tyrants is obedient to God, obedience to God. John Adams describes what Jefferson proposed. Mr. Jefferson proposed the children of Israel in the wilderness, led by a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, and on the other side, Hengist and Horsa, the Saxon chiefs from whom we claim the honor of being descended, and whose political principles and form of government we have assumed. Professor Gilbert Chinnard, one of the distinguished biographers of Jefferson, states, Jefferson's great ambition at that time was to promote a renaissance of Anglo-Saxon primitive institutions on the new continent. Thus presented, the American Revolution was nothing but the reclamation of the Anglo-Saxons' birthrights, of which the colonists had been deprived by a long train of abuses. Nor does it appear that there was anything in this theory which surprised or shocked his contemporaries. Adams apparently did not disapprove of it, and it would be easy to bring in many similar expressions of the same idea in documents of the time. Let me read in a couple more paragraphs. On August 13, 1776, Jefferson wrote of Edmund Pendleton to convince him that Virginia must abolish the remnants of feudatism and return to the ancient principles. He wrote, "Are we not better for what we have hitherto abolished of the federal system? Has not every restitution of the ancient Saxon laws had happy effects? Is it not better now that we return at once onto that happy system of our ancestors, the wisest and most perfect ever yet devised by the wit of man, as it stood before the 8th century?" And in particular, by the way, Jefferson was very specifically talking about the jury, by the way, and of course, a rule by the people and not by a particular government. They were the servants, and that, of course, is how our system was set up, but we have been robbed of that, and it's now time for we the people to take it back. Now, one of the things we're doing right now, and it's extremely important that we all get involved. We need more people to get involved. We don't have enough people getting involved. We have thousands and thousands of people that are following along, but only hundreds that are really, really involved and working diligently, getting the message out, stuffing envelopes, getting our papers out to the courts, and so on. And we've moved now, all papers now are being filed with all oath takers of the United States, both in the federal courts and the states. And, of course, that's a big job. A couple of people in each state can't do it alone. They need help. So everybody should be calling their state coordinators. Everybody should be getting together on their state meetings and volunteering their help when the time comes. We need to put out one paper a week for the next few weeks, I'd say at least for the next 4 weeks, in order to get to the point where we really want to get to. We have a paper that we have written a couple of weeks ago, but the people are not primed yet, and they're not ready to receive that paper. We have to prepare the people to receive that paper. And it's the paper, I think, that will get us into the courts or bring us very close to something. Something's going to happen at that point. Anyway, since then, of course, we've been going over that paper over and over and over again, making it better and better, much more powerful. And I can assure you that that paper that we're talking about is even stronger and much more bolder than the Quo Warranto. It is the paper that we need to get out immediately, but again, we can't get it out until we prime the people. By priming the people, we mean we have to educate the oath takers. They're not ready to receive that message that we're ready, that we want to send out. So we now, as of the sheriff's letter that's been going out recently, and I have to check with I have to check with Gary to see where we are, if all the states are caught up. We will be having a state coordinators meeting this week, and as a matter of fact, it will be tomorrow. So all the state coordinators need to be there. We need to discover what states have accomplished what, and whatever states haven't been able to accomplish certain things, we need to understand what their needs are so that we as a people across the nation could meet those needs for those people in those states. We do have a few states that do not have much of a membership, and they don't have a lot of volunteers, and they don't have many people throwing in money to get the necessary work done. So we have to work together with them to assist them in any way we can, the people of other states around them, for instance. We embarked on a fundraiser. I should hope that everybody's heard about this. And the state coordinators have been asked to take 20 raffle tickets apiece. That'll be for a total of 1,000 raffle tickets. That's 20 times 50 states. Although some of the smaller states may only take 10, and some of the larger states may take 30. So one way or the other, we're looking to get out 1,000 raffle tickets, and we're asking for a donation of $20. And for that $20, there will be gifts that will be given out starting January 1st all the way through till February 28th. And you will get a very distinct three-digit number, and that's why there will only be 1,000 or 999 tickets, shall I say, that's going to be given out for a donation of $20. Starting on January 1st, there'll be a number picked every day for the next 58 or 59 days. I think it's 59 days. For the next 59 days, all through January and all through February. And those numbers, people will receive a gift of whoever's picks that particular lucky number of $25 during the week and $100 on the weekend. Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday through Friday, $25. And hopefully we'll be able to move these tickets, and the money that we will accumulate will be used to pay some bills, to get more Juris books ordered, and also to assist some of the states that are having problems and don't have the money to get out their mailing. We have to find a way to raise money. And this seems to be a very good way to raise money. It becomes sort of a game for people and an opportunity to win something, and at the same time give a donation to probably the most important movement in America. And I'm going to remove probably. I'm going to say to the most important movement in America. There is no other plan that I'm aware of that is laid out that could save America. And we're getting very close to the end of the days of liberty, unless we the people step up and do something. So we need everybody to be participating. You know, volunteer your time when the time comes to get papers out. Try to volunteer your time to do something, even if it's the person who will print the papers out or part of the papers out. Getting together with others to stuff the envelopes, to put the stamps on. And we are using the 3-cent stamp that we're going to continue with. It's been reasonably successful. We've had some returns, but we do have a plan for that. And for those who are spearheading this, we'll discuss that in more detail on the coordinators meeting. We have been receiving a lot of the letters back that have gone out to Washington, D.C., to the news media. Someone suggested, well, we're getting them back because it's Washington, D.C., it's not a domestic letter, so on and so forth. Well, no, that's all a fraud, so we don't subscribe to that anyway, so we reject that. But that is not why they're being returned. They're being returned because it appears that these news medias are not receiving mail in Washington, D.C. Every one of these news medias, we also have an address, which they have been receiving and they haven't been returned, going to whatever state it is that they're in. If it's Fox News, for instance, I think Fox News is in New York, Manhattan, so we sent a letter to Manhattan, Fox News, but we also sent one to Washington. But all of those are being returned. And again, it's because they're saying that they couldn't find the recipient. So I guess they just don't have mailing. They're not receiving mailing there. But for whatever reason, they're getting it on the other end. So they are getting it. One of the problems, of course, we're having with the media is, they've been taken over by the enemy. One of our papers going out soon is going to have, I'm going to read something that we're putting, this is a final notice to the news media. I've been sending to the news media for months on end now, a lot of the work we've been doing. And when I say the news media, I mean all of the major news medias. None of them have run any stories on us at all, not one, on anything we've done. And this is what we wrote. It's going to be in the paper that will be called a writ of mandamus. And I won't say who the writ of mandamus is going to at this moment. But at the end of it, it'll be written in red, one paragraph, which reads, "Final notice. The mainstream media has sided with the enemy of our republic, proven by its dereliction of duty to report the news. If the media was honorable, America would not be in distress, because the media had a duty to speak, being the only profession protected under the First Amendment for the purpose of securing liberty. By their silence, they are guilty as principled under 18 U.S. Code, subsection 2A. Whoever commits an offense against the United States or aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, or procures its commission is punishable as principal. Therefore, it is the duty of every American to copy and post this information everywhere and to everyone." So, from this point forward, everybody needs to get into the act. Everybody has got to become busy participating, giving at least, a half hour, an hour, whatever amount of time you can, a week, to the state group to assist in the getting out of this mail. Also, we need everybody to get the word out to the media. And to the people specifically, we need everybody to be printing these papers on their own. Print the quo warranto. Print out the paper, the information for the sheriff. We have a paper that we've got written up, and we're ready. It's the next paper going out. We'll probably read it next Monday, as long as it goes out before then. And that's going to be concerning the Second Amendment. We have a serious situation that has taken place already a little over a year ago, where these people that think they own our country have already signed on our behalf of America to agree with the United Nations concerning gun control. And just this past September, our president spoke at the UN, and he talked about how we in America, all the people, need to work together on this project, which ultimately what he was talking about is the disarming of people around the world, particularly here in America, of course. And we reject that. We will resist that. If we don't, if we give in, of course, we know that the end results. Anytime any nation has given up their guns, after that, millions of people died by the hands of those in their government who have their guns. So it would be complete suicide to give up our weapons. Why would a nation want the people to give up their guns? There is absolutely no reason whatsoever. Of course, they try to create different excuses, but none of it works. So that's an important paper. We'll read it hopefully next week. But again, we're not going to read it until we know it's going out. And we hope to get it out during the course of this next week, maybe next weekend, possibly right after Christmas. Christmas is on Thursday, so maybe Saturday, hopefully, we can start pushing them, or even Monday. If we're pushing them out on Monday, that'd be fine, too. And then, of course, we'll release it, we'll post it, and we'll read it. But, like a pump, you have to prime a pump before you can pump the water. Well, before we can pump justice through the system, pump justice through the minds and the hearts of all of the oath takers of America, we first have to prime their hearts. We have to prime their pumps. We have to prime their thinking, their minds. And that's why we're sending all these papers out. Really, the process of what we're doing is really educating. We drew the line in the sand with the quo warranto. We let them know what exactly it is that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, of course, says what their authority is and by what authority they get their authority. We laid it out very, very clearly with the line in the sand. We told them their powers, their authorities, and what they cannot do and what they shall not do. We've given them orders and told them to obey the law, the rule of law, to permit the people to take their rightful seat within the court system, which is our duty and our right, and to prevent us and to resist us is an act of a tyrant. And so therefore, this is what our paperwork is about. Anybody who reads the quo warranto, you don't have to be an educated individual to read the words of logic, the words of righteousness, and the words of our founding fathers. They spoke in simple terms in everyday language. Yeah, there might be a few things that's a little difficult, so we go get a dictionary for that. But even without it, the power and the authority of the paper in itself, I think, speaks for itself, and every American can understand it and comprehend it and appreciate it. The other papers that are necessary to go in, also the same. The sheriff paper that we wrote was to lay out and describe the power of the sheriff, the authority of the sheriff, by what authority he acts, what his duty is, what he needs to know. And if every sheriff was to understand the paper that we wrote, and we're getting out right now, and I forget how many pages there was, 14 or 16 pages, but if every sheriff was to read that carefully and go through it numerous times and really understand what's being said there, I would promise you, if they understood and they believed in their hearts that they had a duty to do the right thing, and that is to obey the law, to uphold their oaths, I will tell you there will be lines of sheriff cars leading right to the prison with all of these people in black robes, because they'd all be in jail. But unfortunately, the sheriff cannot ascertain the crime. They don't understand the crime. They don't see the crime. They don't understand. They just don't understand it. They've taken oaths to things and they don't know what they really took an oath to. They don't know. Read the Second Amendment. The right to bear arms shall not be infringed. What other words do you need? Where does the permit come in play? Where does some license come into play? Where does someone have to approve my ability to step up and take up a right? That's a right. Why would I be arrested? Why would the sheriff participate with that? Why would he house a building where many people are in jail for weapons charges when they haven't done anything wrong? They just were found with a gun, and they're in jail, and the sheriff is the jailer. He's holding them there. If they understood, they'd be opening the jail tomorrow. They'd be seeking a real grand jury so that they can get a release, because surely a righteous and a just grand jury would release all of these people from jail immediately. We do habeas corpus, pull them right into the courthouse, right into the courtroom, and just let them walk out the other side, go free. but, of course, we can't do that without having the authority, and we also can't do that without having the understanding of the sheriff. He needs to understand what his authority is and what his duty is. He doesn't know. Someone said to me not long ago, speaking to a sheriff, that the sheriff says, I just don't know what the law really is. He just doesn't know. No one's explained it to him. He didn't learn it in school. You can't get it from a sheriff. Can't get it from a lawyer. You can't get it from a judge. After all, the judge doesn't want to go to jail by telling him what he can, what his duties are, because the judge is breaking his oath and his duty every day. He's violating the unalienable rights of people every single day, day in and day out. And until the sheriff is able to see and understand that, he can't do anything. Also, our research has shown us that it is not the prosecutor that is to call for the grand jury. It is the sheriff that is to call for the grand jury. Of course, if the state were to see a crime and through the prosecutor, they could have the authority to call for the grand jury. And, of course, the grand jury would oblige them to hear what their complaint is and concerns to see if there was a crime. Nothing wrong with that. But that should not be the norm. It is not the job of the prosecutor to make these decisions, to be the gatekeeper to the grand jury. After all, him working with the judge prevents any justice from being done. It's the fox in charge of the hen house. But the true job really belongs to the sheriff. After all, it's the sheriff that's out in the street, and it's the sheriff that arrests maybe a murderer or someone who is breaking an entry or something of that nature. And so they need to notify the grand jury first thing in the morning after the crime and to let them know that we need a grand jury ASAP. Because why? They cannot be, because the Fifth Amendment says that they cannot be held to answer for a crime except by a, let me read it, Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, period, end of subject. There's no such thing as an arraignment. You don't go before a judge to be arraigned. The sheriff takes the person directly to jail and summonses the grand jury. The grand jury must respond, in my opinion, within at least minimum 72 hours, okay, in the case of a situation where there's particularly violence involved, maybe a murder or a robbery or something of that nature. And if that county cannot summons a grand jury that quick, maybe the county next door can oblige. Maybe they have a sitting grand jury at that moment, and they can hear the case in order to make the necessary indictment if it's necessary. And, of course, that's the decision of the people. And only then is the person then brought before an arraignment to answer for their crime. And maybe a bail might be set. And, of course, that would be up to the authority, I think, of the magistrate at that point, that which seems to be appropriate, or the judge, and then, of course, a trial must go forward. But generally speaking, a lot of crimes, they don't need to be arrested off right away. They could be summoned into the court and brought before the grand jury, or the case could be brought before the grand jury and a decision could be made. But nevertheless, the point is, it is the sheriff that generally calls for the grand jury. He's the one to call them. And, of course, the people themselves can call for the grand jury. There should be an administrative office, and that's, of course, what we're doing. We're creating administrative processes in every courthouse, which is directly connected to the people through in the courthouse, where the people will have access into their own courts. This is their courts. This doesn't belong to the judge. This doesn't belong to the prosecutor. This doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to the people. This is our courts of justice, and we want to make sure that they are courts of justice, not the courts of injustice that they are right now, where people get no justice at all. Nobody wins in courts, in these courts today. The only ones that win are the elite, the corporations. But in any event, this is the job of the people. And so the people should have access to get a hold of their grand jury, to be able to go into the courthouse and say, I'd like to speak to the grand jury foreman. And if there is no grand jury foreman at that point available because they're not in session, I'd like to speak to some of the grand jury administrators. And the administrators, of course, are the investigative body for the grand jury. They do the investigations on behalf of the grand jury, on behalf of the people, and they bring the cases before the grand jury, and the grand jury, of course, decides indict or no. And of course, the administration also, as we've been teaching for quite some time now, also calls for the trial jury, and we get to orientate them on the law and history and what the jury is all about and what the duty is and the principles necessary to hold up in order to do their duty. So this whole thing is about education. We need to get our message out, and we are now sending our message out to everybody. We're sending out to every sheriff, to the FBI, to the military, to the marshals, to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to the state, every state court, to every federal court, to every state judge, to every federal judge, and of course, in our state representatives, both Congresses in our state, all 50 of our states, and both Congresses, of course, in Washington, in our federal city, not Washington, D.C. Washington, District of Columbia is a fiction. It doesn't exist. It exists in the minds of the people who have set up that fiction in order to fleece us, in order to destroy us, and it doesn't really exist in reality. It exists in our minds, and it's a fiction. And the moment we come to realize that, we can then bring it back to Washington for what it was meant to be, the federal city of the United States of America, the people. But that is the purpose of our papers, is to educate these people. After all, we have to prime them in order to receive the real message, and the real message is the message to let our people go, to let the people come into this process and take up their rightful seat in these court systems, and therefore participate in the control of their government, which is right now at this point out of control. Okay, I think that's pretty much all I have to say. We're going to open the floor up for questions or comments. And so, Gerard, if let me move over to the Q&A. We'll turn that on. And anybody that wants to get into QA, I believe it's star 1. Is that what it is, Gerard? And the star 1 and star 6? Or pound 1 and pound 6?
I think it's star 6 and then 1, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, go right ahead, Gerard. You can take some of the questioning for tonight.
Yeah, and I actually have a question about something, but I'll hold it off for now.
Well, let's do yours first. Let's finish off, and then we'll take the next question. I see Jason.
As far as our site goes, we're telling everybody that if they want to see what we filed and what we've written, to go to Breaking News, right?
Right.
So when you go to Breaking News, it's in chronological order, right? So I was thinking about the sheriff. You know, we mail to them for 6 weeks, and I'm looking for those mailings, if where they are on the site. Well, you gotta go down through this thing to pick them out. I'm wondering, because it's so spread out over everything, if we shouldn't put all the letters to the sheriffs under a tab that a sheriff can go in and read all of them in one place. Without scrolling like crazy and looking, it's too hard. They're not going to do it. The other thing is maybe the judges, we could have in a spot for the judges what we filed and what we've written to the judges. We got some pretty good stuff. You got some good papers in there about what a terrorist is and all that stuff that we filed with the judges. And that I think that the judges, it's going to be hard for them to go through everything to pick out their messages. I think it would be better if we had a place that each particular group could go to and see what National Liberty Alliance has said to them and their group. And then later on, if they want to hear what we said to the sheriffs, let them go peruse around the sheriff's letter. And that might even help them, you know what I mean? But anyway, I didn't see any one place to go to get those sheriff's letters. I'm not even sure that I got all of them by going through here. They must be here, I would imagine. We posted everything, right?
Well, on the far right side, you'll see duty of the sheriff by what authority. That's on every page, as a matter of fact, far right side. And by the way, you know, I'm looking at this right side, I see fundraiser there. Anybody wants to get a little more information on this fundraiser, click on that button there. If we're going to achieve our goal, we have to find a way to get money. You know, we ask people to give $5 a month or more, and we get a couple of hundred people who do that, and some people give more than $5. We actually have a few people who give us $100 a month and even 50. But most people are 5 or 10 or 20, and that's sufficient. 5 is sufficient if we have enough people doing it, but we don't. We just don't. We're always struggling, trying to get money. You know, we have states that need help, and we'd love to be able to write checks out to those states that really cannot afford to do what needs to be done. We were at a meeting with, I think it was Tennessee recently, and they had already put together a kitty and been working in the state. They've got $700 in their kitty. I heard them talking about it. And that's more than sufficient amount of money for any state to get out the rest of the letters that we have to get out. So if every state should have a kitty going on, people should be throwing 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks or whatever they can afford into that kitty. And if you got 20, 30 active people in a state, you got plenty of money to do all the necessary mailings that need to be done to buy the stamps, to get the letters out, and to keep this process going. You know, we are not going to accomplish our goal unless we do this, what we need right now, this mailing. And if they decide to take this thing down before we get to where we need to be, we're going to be in a very precarious position. We're not organized well enough within the realm of the Oath Keepers in order to really work with them to really maintain America. We're going to lose America. We're going to have to fight to keep her, and we're going to have to fight to keep her anyway. But we're really going to have a problem if we're not positioned well enough and they're not educated enough. They need to be educated. They need to be primed. They need to understand what their duty is. They need to understand what they got to do in the time of an emergency. And so it's so important that we get this message out. So in any event, you know, we got to pay the bills. We got to pay for all these things. We have to order more books to get more grand jury booklets out. And then we also have to assist the states that have just a few people in it. They can't come up with enough money to take care of the necessary work that they need to do. We have one state in particular where the active people are people who are on Social Security. And they're doing all the work, and there's a couple of them, and they're able to get the work done, but they don't have the funds to pay for it. Well, then the state next door has to help, or we can help if we have that extra funding to help those people. So please, everybody, get a hold of your state coordinator. Tell them that you'd like to get involved in the fundraiser. You'd like to buy a ticket or whatever you want to call it, a calendar. What would we call it?
It is a calendar. It's a calendar.
Okay, a calendar. And and that calendar, you know, you have an opportunity of getting your money back also. You have 59 chances of getting a return on your money. So there's a little excitement there, too. Right. So, again, every state coordinator needs to work diligently to sell 20 or to get donations for 20 calendars. And all the people listening to involved in what we're doing, call your state coordinator. Ask them, tell them you want to get a calendar, and let's get this thing going. Meanwhile, of course, anybody who can give $5 a month or more, please go to our donation page and do that also. And if we can hold ourselves up through donations that way, fine. If not, we're going to have to continue to find different fundraisers in order to raise the money to do the work that we need to get done to save America. Only the people can save America. The question is, will you? How much are you willing to invest? You have to invest your time and a few dollars. So, anyway, now your question, I guess we can spend more time What we could do is we could figure out another tab and put another tab up here.
Yeah, I'll talk to you offline about it. I just it's like, you know, the letter that we got on the breaking news page is kind of old. It's back in April. It says we're waiting for this date to come in April. So that either needs to be updated or we need to show the other ones we sent out. Because we sent six or seven of them, and I don't really see them. So
yeah, they're
sheriff,
in there. You got to go back through them, but they are in it. But okay, yeah, we'll work on that. We'll straighten
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah. So I just thought that would be helpful. Yeah. And let me unmute Jason because we cut him off just as we told him to go. I think he probably bit his tongue. I'm sorry, Jason. Hang on. Let me open you up.
No, you're not. You're not.
No, I don't bite my tongue. I just try to have other people bite theirs.
You know all you need to do is click that button that says next question, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And that revolves. Okay. I don't know if you've used the board yet, but go ahead.
I don't have a question per se. I just want to tell you what Kalama, Phil, and I have been doing. We did our second sheriff's letter. We mailed it out to you, Sheila, who's having a problem with the email, Gerard and Gary, for your notification. We sent it out. I sent it out to all 21 of my county sheriffs. And also to on Facebook, and that's very important. Also, we need to. Will you be sending out your coming out letter for National Liberty Lions so we can be that flamboyant? Not that we are, but I'm just saying we will be demonstrative to to the authorities and know that we're alive. And also, I just saw in the media that the Supreme Court ruled in the favor of a legal search of the Fourth Amendment, forgiving this officer for his violation of the Fourth Amendment. Again, all these Supreme Court justices need to be arrested, and they can do that under the sheriff's rule that was found in the research that we did in the letter we sent out. We also are waiting to get, we need to have your sheriff's emails. So when we're doing a letter from the from Pacifica News Service, that we could send this information out to be more effective on that sense. And
the sheriffs do need to understand that they need to be arresting these people, but they don't know that they need to be. They don't understand by what authority. They don't understand how to go about it, in a sense, because the controlling body of this whole process is the prosecutor. And go arrest the judge and see if the prosecutor is going to allow that to stand. He's going to turn the whole story around, and they're going to attack that sheriff. So we have to educate the sheriff, and we got to work with the sheriff and get behind them. We got to get all the oath keepers working together. And that's the only way we're going to save America.
Well, I just want you to know, I do have a rapport with Sheriff Thomas Head Hutchins in Massachusetts. So I need as much information I can to him. Just as a suggestion, when we have our documents that we can print off, if they can be done in a booklet form, that would be idyllic, because again, instead of having to flip something, you're opening it up like a book. This makes it a lot easier if that could be arranged in our part. And also, the body that I put into the letter, it needs to be part of the sheriff's power. So, he's more aware of it. And, again, and when we're doing news releases, we don't want to have it that it's a writ. We just want to have it plain and simple. I know that my article generally is only one page, but it was like one and a half pages. But, again, we needed to get that information out and really be demonstrative with our results. But, again, if everyone in the state, in the United States, can get that letter to the sheriffs out. And we only have two more days. December 24th is the arresting behavior of the United Nations coming in and trying to usurp our rights and our guns. And that means that if it's going to someone's house, they're going to go in there, knock on the door. We want your gun. No, you can't.
It's not going to happen that quickly. Basically, what's happening on the 24th, that is the day that it goes into effect for the United Nations. Now, as far as the United States is concerned, in order for them to make a move, that's going to take quite some time to do something. But, of course, we do have to be concerned about them pulling the plug. the economic, the financial, the monetary plug. So, but no, look, and we do have a paper for that, and we'd love to get that paper out between Christmas and New Year's. I'd like to have gotten it out already, but that didn't happen. But we'll see if we can't get it going, after tomorrow's meeting, maybe by next weekend, which will be between the holidays.
An issue of the sheriff's letters or the emails, if it's possible to get that, the Pacific News Service would really appreciate that because we wouldn't have to go through it. At New Jersey, we don't even have emails for our sheriffs. But like Nebraska, everything's out there, 1, 2, 3. It seems that they're a little more together than, say, New Jersey. And it's, if they can get a yay on that, that I can get that email.
Didn't we, John, put out the sheriff's emails? Didn't we have a book and we posted all the sheriff's emails that we knew nationally by that company that publishes that book once every, I don't know how many years?
Yeah, we'll have to find out where that's at. I do have a list of every sheriff in America. I think it's like about, there are some missing, obviously, but I think I like 26 or 2,800 or something like that.
Right, so that's
and,
a good start.
And so I'm going to be emailing the same paperwork to the sheriff. I'm going to be emailing the Quo Vadis, and I'm going to start on a campaign for that. From the perspective of the unified United States common law grand jury sending them a letter. And so we're just going to be copying them through the email what they're going to be getting through the regular mail. But I wanted to do it behind them. I didn't want to do it first. I wanted to be sort of a backup support coming through the email also.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, I thought we need to keep Eric Gardner issue really alive. I mean, like, I'm really upset that those two police officers are executed. I mean, I don't want to see anyone killed, regardless of where they are on the right side, the left side, or the underside. I just don't want to see anyone killed because, in my belief as a human being, every person has a value. And taking that one, losing that person before they fulfill their goal in their life, it's a loss for everyone in our society. But we need to be focusing on that. Eric Gardner and the Ferguson Brown affair, that we have to be adamant because, again, we have to pick everyone's cool head because Sheriff Davis in Milwaukee said that on the record that President Obama is responsible for this racial divide, and the information is that the stats are that they are racially being divided more than before Obama came into play. So, just making these suggestions, John, you're the caretaker, and I'm just one of your loyalists.
Okay.
And any feedback or anything else I can do? Gerard, did you see the letter, the email that I emailed it to you?
No, I didn't get to my email today. It was my first day back to work. But I'll check it when we come out of here.
And
I don't know which would... You sent it to Gerard 53, did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
That's what I did. That's what I have. And I also sent it to Sheila. Sheila's mailbox is being backed out. I'm not getting into it. But I also sent it on to, like I said, Gary, so get it out. We only got 2 days, and it's a demonstrative letter, and we really need that to get out to all our sheriffs ASAP. And if we sit on our hands, we're just as guilty as the criminals that we're trying to get rid of.
Okay, very good.
All right. I yield. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and a Happy New Year.
Okay.
And have made in 2015, find us better resolve and further along our trail to free ourselves from the yokes of the imperialist capitalists that are called corporate America. Thank you.
Yeah.
You still got me.
Okay, New York Michael, you're unmuted.
Hello, Gerald and John.
How you doing?
Good. This is Mike Watchdog from Erie County.
Yeah.
I have a court date coming up with family court, And my question is about the Quo Warranto.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would be advisable to use that in my case and provide that, because I'm filing a counterclaim and thinking about using that and putting that in first as a judicial notice, just for reference. But when I pulled it down, I think John said we could do that or he should do that.
Right.
However, when I pulled it down, it was just basically the Quo Warranto, and it didn't have any of the foreman's signature on it or any stamps or anything. So really that would have no actually force and effect or any weight to give any credence to the document, I don't think.
All right, what we're going to try to do is try to get all these documents up, and I'll try to do it this week. I don't know if I'll have the time, but I'll try to do it this week. We'll get all of the important documents in one place. As Gerard mentioned, we need to find a place, and when you'll be able to go there and choose any of these documents, and we'll make sure we'll have a seal on it. We'll use an ink seal because the impress seal won't be able to be seen on printing.
Right.
And we'll get a signature on them. And, yeah, people can use this as an authority. After all, we are an authority. You can use it as an authority in your case. Refer to it. Use it as an exhibit.
Right, exactly. That's what I was hoping to do. So it's okay then to use it once we get the signature and the written seal on there, correct?
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Okay. That was my question.
Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Look, it's in the court. It's in the public realm. We couldn't even tell you that you couldn't use it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's already been filed. You know, you can use it. They can't stop you. You know what I mean? And in a certain sense, if you're going to use it as an authority, you don't even have to ask permission. It's there. You use it.
Okay.
You know, it's filed in the court, right? I mean, anybody can get a hold of that. I mean, and that's how you have to use it as an authority that this, you know, this was filed into this court and here's their stamp. That, right?
Right. Just to back up the original filings that you guys sent out to the courts to substantiate it and to let them know that, hey, it's hitting home here. It's in your own backyard, guys. You know, wake up.
Right. Okay. Good. Is that it? Or you got something else?
No, that's good. Okay. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you, Michael. Okay, next question. I got an unknown. Hang on a minute. This thing is not working right, John. Let's see. I have to.
Yeah, maybe when they're unmuted, they give us their name and their state.
Okay, next caller, 0160. Give me your name and your state. You're coming in as an unknown, so who is that in the queue? 0160 is the last four numbers.
Oh, yes, Gerard. Hello, I'm sorry. Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Glad to speak to you and John. It's hard to get a hold of you folks. I just got some real quick questions here I'd like to ask you. First of all, about the $5 donation or any other correspondence, I can't do computers, but I got this address here in Hyde Park, New York, on Albany Post Road. Can I send mail to that address?
Yeah, that's the address. That's National Liberty Alliance's mailing address.
Okay, it says here what I got from the library, 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. That's correct?
That's correct, yes. Anybody?
Okay, good. I'll send stuff.
Unfortunately, on PayPal, if you want to make a direct donation, you can use any credit card. If you want to purchase books now, you can purchase books through credit card now online, and that could be done through any credit card or PayPal, whatever you want. But for some reason, PayPal, it's for money reasons, is why, they, when it comes to subscriptions, which we call a subscription, when it comes to that, they require you to have a PayPal account in order to make a subscription or a donation. And in order to change that around, it costs more money from our perspective, but also there are other problems. So we're just going to leave that alone for right now. And anybody who can't use doesn't have a PayPal to make a monthly donation, they can just mail it to us. Or they can make a donation once a month on the other one. You know, there is right underneath the monthly one, you could do a one-time donation right below it, and that you can use a regular credit card for. So people can do that on their own once a month.
Okay, John, can I ask some more rapid-fire questions here?
Yeah.
Okay. This one here, I want to ask you about if you had a case in a federal court. This is New York State is the Second District, right? Or Second Circuit, I'm sorry.
What do you mean, for the federal court?
Yeah, that's in the nation. There's
the Southern District, there's the Northern District, there's the Western District, and there's a fourth one. I don't think they call it the Eastern.
I thought it was the Second District. I had a map of it, but what I'm saying is it includes New York State, Connecticut, and I think Vermont. So here's my question, John. If you got a corrupt court where you're living, the whole damn place is corrupt. With all the, can you demand or request a change of venue to say that the federal courts take the matter over to some judge in Connecticut or Vermont? Could you do that?
Well, look, the problem is that they're all corrupt. Unfortunately, there's no honorable judge out there. I haven't seen one yet. I don't know if anybody else has seen an honorable judge. Maybe they can get into the queue and tell us about them, because I haven't found them yet. And believe me, we've spent a lot of time in the courts. We've spent a lot of time communicating to judges and different people, and we haven't found them yet. So whatever you do, it's an uphill battle. You can get rid of the judge by suing a judge. Huh?
But could you change the venue to some other state in the same circuit?
I don't know. I don't know whether they'd permit that or not.
Okay, here's another question, real quick one. Yeah. Thing called a private attorney general.
Uh-huh.
Hey, can you deputize yourself to do it if you're going to try to help several people at one time, not just yourself?
Well, what is it that you want to do?
Well, I just found out, this is going to get, I don't know if you want to talk about it. I have a friend in Las Vegas, okay? I know this person that visits him, and I talked to him once in a while. He ended up in jail. He's been there a month and a half, and finally I'm able to talk to him on the phone. I'm finding out, John, it's really bad what's going on there. They got this casino, right? And you got a lot of these poor people. There's a lot of homeless people living in Vegas, and this young man is one of them. He walks through there every day, and what they're doing, John and Gerard, is they got the undercover cops in there putting a little pouch along the floor near this abandoned blackjack table. And people will pick it up. They're desperate. And they think maybe it's abandoned or might be something. And then they go out the door, and they get confronted and arrested, and they're not told what's in the bag. And until you get to the trial, there's no due process. There's no...
We don't want to get too lost in a particular case. But, yeah, there's six people in the same prison
for the same thing at the same casino.
They set people up all the time, all the time. It's illegal for them to do these things. They do it anyway because they write the statutes for that. But it's an uphill battle. The only way we're going to win all these problems is to stay focused and get our courts back. Once we get our courts back, then the people will have the decision-making on these things, on what's right and what's wrong. And that's the only thing we could do. And of course, that's the powerful thing we could do. And so getting into the courts is the key. I believe that we could be in the courts in the next 6 weeks if the people that are involved and listening to what we're doing and involved in coming to the meetings or listening to our meetings if they're not coming live to the meetings, if they get involved working in their states, helping to get these papers out, and work with us to continue to get the word out to all the people. Because we have to get this out to whatever media we can send it to. Just get the word out. But the key thing is to get it to every elected official. We have to bombard them with these papers and to the point where they do read them and they do become educated. So when the time comes, they will know the time. Everyone will know the time when they see it. And when the time comes, we can take our courts back. And that time is close, but it can't happen until we prime the people, the oath takers. And the oath takers is every elected individual in office, the ones on the levels that we spoke, law enforcement, military, and of course our representatives in Washington and up in our state capitals. Those are the most important people. You can get it out to your mayors and commissioners and other people, but that should be the last. You should be spending your energy into the upper tier, to the people that are really going to be the people that are going to be put onto the spot. Someday it's coming. It's coming very close. They're going to be put onto the spot. They're going to know they have to do something. And then it'll become a landslide. That's what I believe will happen. But this is how we're going to win it.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, two quick ones. All right. The Fifth Amendment business in grand jury indictment. I know this man that's going to go in town court, and I'm wondering, now, what is this quasi-criminal garbage they're trying to do? Are they trying to say some kind of a, they can have some kind of a case against you without having a grand jury with a quasi-criminal charge? If you try to ask them what's the nature and cause of this matter when you go before the judge?
80 to 90% of the court cases, criminal court cases that go forward with a, without a grand jury.
All right, here's the thing,
though. Across America.
If they get arrested, then, without it being a criminal charge, then you could bring that up to the judge, right, that they're not following due process?
They're not going to listen to you. Look, they are the problem. The reason why they're getting railroaded is because they're sitting in that seat allowing that to happen, and they're not going to change it. They're making money. It's all about money, and it's all about their obedience to the bar. It's that simple. It
okay, I got one more
difficult
question.
Than that.
John, I got one more question about the oath. If you know what the New York State Constitution says, besides the federal, it says right at the top there, preamble. This I believe is very powerful to go after a judge or anybody with this. It says we the people are thankful to Almighty God for our freedom, establish this Constitution, which means, John, that they acknowledge when they take the oath they read it. That God gives you your freedom means He's the ultimate authority. Right there in the courtroom, could you just show the judge that document and say, would you read that, sir? Is God the ultimate authority in this courtroom? And if he won't answer, then you start rifling back at him some scriptures from God saying, sir, you're rebelling against God. You have no jurisdiction over me. I don't consent to this.
If he doesn't have any fear of you, what he's going to do, he's going to get you for contempt. He's going to tell you to shut up and sit down. And he's going to say it this way. This is how he's going to do it, and this is how he's going to say it. What's your first name again?
Walt.
Walt? Okay,
yeah.
Walt, shut up and sit down. Speak one more word, I'm going to have you for contempt. Do you understand me? That's what he's going to do. And once you start pushing that judge back, he doesn't like that. Okay, so if he doesn't fear you because he can't figure you out, he's going to take you out. So, and people are going to shut up and sit down.
Says in his oath. Maybe not his specific, but all the other ones, it says you must bear witness to it. So we have a right to ask the judge, sir, are you going to bear witness tonight to your oath, sir?
We're not here to discuss that.
In other words, he's going to stand for it. He believes it. Not just because he took the oath 5 years ago whenever he signed that paper. I'm saying when you're in that courtroom, you have a right to show him. So it says here, the first Article 4, Section 1, says full faith and credit. All records must be proved and its effect. So you tell the judge, sir, according to the Article 4 and also what I just said, I just forgot what I said, some of the oaths that federal employees sign
they must bear witness to it.
Are you going to bear witness to your oath tonight, sir?
They don't
Listen,
care.
If you get the first sentence out, will you bear witness, and he starts telling you shut up, then you just shut up because you just entered it into the record that you asked him to bear witness. And he refused by telling you to shut up. You don't need to do any more than that. Any more than that, you're just antagonizing him.
Yeah, the rest of your work...
Can I just ask you this now? This judge is going to have some kind of a...
Here's the problem.
Stenographer.
Look, here's your problem.
I'm not talking about me. This young man I'm trying to help. He said the last time he went into the court there, he had some kind of electronic pad. Now, does he have a mute button that he can edit out anything he wants, John and Jared?
Well, they're not supposed to edit anything out, but they do.
Here's your problem, okay? They believe they're the kings of the court. They do whatever they want. They're criminal to the point that they don't even realize how evil they are. They really don't know because to them it's an everyday job. They've been doing this so long, and they haven't even thought of the consequences if they were able to be held accountable. And they're not even aware of how immoral, because they're lost in the game. They're lost in the authority. They're lost in the power. They're lost in the money. Things are too good for them. And they know that when you take it up line to make a complaint that they're well protected, because they're not going to come against him. And even if you go through the appellate system, the Court of Appeals, the appellate process, they don't care because they know they're going to win anyway. And they expunge all the papers. They'll do it right in front of you. They'll remove things right in front of you and even mail them back to you. They've done that to us already. And or they'll just make them disappear. We have Prudente, who we have indicted down here in New York City, okay, which is the second chief judge here in New York State, second only to one, and she has gotten involved in one of the cases of people that we know, and she has removed all of his paperwork in a criminal case down in Brooklyn, all of his paperwork from the files. And when the guy went down there to check his files to make sure his paperwork is there, it wasn't there. And the clerk told him, Judge Prudente took it. Okay? They're not even afraid of that. That's how powerful they think. That's how arrogant they are. That's how sure they are protected.
You brought this up. I got to tell you one thing, John. I didn't tell you yet. I have a case in the federal courts in Rochester, New York. And I'm a former postal employee, retired. With the health insurance I got now, the mail handler's insurance, they provide free legal assistance to me. Lawyers, they have a contract with Aetna. So they sent me a promotion thing. Says, anytime you need free legal services with bar card licensed attorneys, you call. We'll refer you to whatever type of lawyer you need 7 days a week. So here's what happened, John. I think I got something here to make it true to these, bust through their defenses, because here's what happened. Everything happened like you just said to my case. They're destroying documents and doing things you wouldn't believe. So here's what I did. I got a hold of one of these attorneys in Albany. On the phone, and I recorded it with her secretary and the attorney. And I says, ma'am, could you please go on the PACER system and see if my case is there? And also the one I had last year, because the one I had last year is related to this one because I'm supposed to have the same judge, and he wasn't assigned because I'm a pro se. That's what the rules are, the federal rules. Judge I had last year should be assigned to this case, and he wasn't. So I'm saying there's something wrong. So I asked the attorney to check these two cases on the PACER. The secretary did, and the attorney got on the phone and said, yes, your cases aren't even on the PACER. So here's what I did, John. I wrote a letter. Please send it, put it in writing what you told me on the phone, certified letter. She wrote me back. She wouldn't do it. She just says, well, yes, there's two cases, or your cases were missing. So I wrote a second certified letter. I said, it's not going to do any good unless you put the numbers down that you look for, and they're not there. So, John, here's what happened. She's not answering. It's well over 6 weeks. So I have something else going on with missing mail going down in Las Vegas, and the postal inspector in Buffalo is checking it out. I told him about this. Now, this could be wire fraud and mail fraud and everything else, John. And I could get the post office now saying that an attorney that you have a contract with is aiding and abetting the federal courts in Rochester, New York, helping destroy documents. What do you think of that, John?
Well, that seems pretty powerful if you could try to get that through that process, of course. I think there'd be a lot better chance going that route because, yeah, you do have agents involved. And they can't really shut them down as fast as they can shut us down. So remember, they do have the protection in the court. They got the prosecutors on their side. They got the judges on their side. They control the grand jury. They control the trial jury. Ultimately, they're going to get away with whatever they want to do in the present system. It is the worst system ever. There's nothing wrong ultimately with the process. And there's nothing wrong with the system per se, but it's all the criminals running it. So it's a problem, and it's an uphill battle. And again, the solution is to get the people into the courts. Once we're in the courts, they'll never be able to do it again. We won't let them.
I'll just say this at the closing, John. There is, I was talking, his name is, he's a very nice man in Buffalo, Postal Inspector Chris Busco. He's helping me with this problem with this missing stolen mail. I sent certified down to Eddie Craig, by the way. At Rule of Law Radio, you probably heard him. He's very good with traffic tickets, and the mail's missing. And it's unbelievable what's happened. Finally, there's a mail room down there at this plaza. There's street businesses, and Rule of Law is one of them. And this mail room may not even be licensed. And you got someone signing for mail going to Eddie Craig down there, and it's totally illegal. My post office is going to be in trouble. Anyway, so when I was involved with that case, the postal inspector from Buffalo calls me about that, and I tell him about this one with the attorney. And he told me about this. There is not only is there a federal postal inspector and a state postal inspector, there is a U.S. post office postal inspector. What do they call it now? I can't remember. I'm getting nervous now. Not a postal inspector general. So there's a state inspector general in New York State, there's a post office, and now that the post office is providing me with attorneys, John, that are committing illegal acts and helping the courts cover up stuff, they may investigate this, John.
That's pretty good now.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good strategy.
You got to get one of those attorneys that's not answering. What they got to get one of them that has the wherewithal to take the conversation where they tell him not to answer you. That's what you need.
Yeah, well, I got to
record
it. Because
he got direct orders.
These cases are not on the pacer, but then she won't back it up. Now she's hiding.
Right, right.
So so the post office hired that attorney to provide me legal services. I'm a postal employee retired. And look what she's doing, this lady. I can give you her name if you want me to.
Well, she's a private contractor with them, though, right?
Yeah, well, yes, that's what they do. Aetna Insurance provides the health care. It's called the Mail Handlers Health Benefits Plan.
Right.
That's what I had this time. I changed over from Blue Cross because I caught them doing corruption. So then they sent me this notice saying you have this legal services available to you. What I can do, John, is I can call their 800 number and get the secretary on the line. She goes, well, what kind of problem do you have? And we have these attorneys for you anywhere in the country. So I got this one, they referred me to in Albany, and this is what happened. Now, I can, if you want me to, I could tell you the attorney's name. Or if you want me to say it, I won't.
It doesn't matter.
I don't mind. Go ahead if you want to. It may help other people.
She's in Albany. And her name is Kara Stiegelmeier.
Okay.
Stiegelmeier. But look, the deeper you dig, the more corruption you're going to find. It goes so deep, forget about that. The rabbit hole just keeps going down.
She's doing, Jed and John, she's now scared. She can't put that writing out because I told her, I said, how am I going to turn your letter in to a prosecutor, a judge, or law enforcement if you don't put the case numbers down? It don't mean anything.
Right.
So now, in about six weeks, she has not answered. If she signed for it, I got the green card back. So what they're doing is, so the post office can't allow this. The attorney's working, contracted with them, helping the false employees, and they're breaking the law. So they got to do something, then.
Well, they're looking to cover up. So the most, they'll put her under the bus. They'll fire her and say, yep, she was bad. There you go. Even though they told her to do it. I mean, look at these guys have got no end to their crap. I mean, you got to get the reports out there and hope that you can get it to somebody who will actually do something about it. But in our experience, all those people stick together. They're birds of a feather.
I'll keep in touch and I'll let you know what happens.
Yeah, and I would just forge ahead. I would keep making the complaints and pushing it up the line and seeing what you can shake loose. You know what I mean? You don't know what you'll shake loose. Now you already got her scared. You know what I mean? So yep. I would keep the pressure on with her at least, and see what breaks loose there. But we got to move on. We got
okay,
a ton
I'll say
of
one more thing, too. This case that it's all about, the recent case, December 7th, I sent a motion to recuse Judge Curtin here in Rochester, who replaced Sarah Grusso. All this crap's going on, illegal stuff. I caught him doing it. So my December 7th motion, recusing Judge Curtin, I put the reasons down. You got to see the reasons. The serious corruption, John and Jared. So I just get back the other day a letter from the court, their answer. One paragraph. I don't have it in front of me. I wish I did right now. But basically, now they bring Saragusa back into it. Neither one of those judges are supposed to be assigned to this case. That was one of my questions, why this happened. They won't answer. So what Judge Saragusa answered, John? You're not going to believe this. Because they're scared to death. Because I told you I'd bring God in it. And I told in my December 7th motion, I said, when Judge Curtin tries to convert my right to access the courts, according to the First Amendment of the United States, and then Judge Curtin's going to change it into a privilege and tax me for it, I said, what's going to happen down the road is, Almighty God Yahweh is going to be Judge Curtin's worst nightmare. I said it like that. Now, let me tell you what Judge Saragusa said in the letter I just got back, the court decision. can dismiss my case that I've had since February just because I won't pay the filing fee. But then he said this. He said, we reviewed your motion from December 7th, and we're going to, I can't think of the word right now, I'm getting nervous. We're going to strike it from the record. He puts it right in there.
Right.
And he says, all you're doing is impugning the employees of the court and their reputation and integrity.
Yeah, they're going to sanction you so you can't apply.
Now, here's the problem with this, John. He's accusing me of committing perjury. It is his duty, Title 18, Section 4, to report me to law enforcement. They're not going to do a damn thing because if they arrest me, bring me in the court, John and Jared, I'm going to scream out what they're doing. So I got this here. And so what they're doing is they have these fake trials through the mail with people like me, and it never gets in the public eye there in the courtroom, and they can do anything they want. That's the game they're playing, like you're saying.
Well, evil knows no boundaries, but that's
yeah, so he's saying to employees that I'm impugning their integrity and their reputation. The employees I'm talking about are three judges I mentioned. He won't say that. He won't say what I'm saying is false. I have three judges in that 12-7 motion, plus one pro se attorney that works in the courthouse that I recorded. She was harassing me so bad on the phone, saying, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to ask your question.
Yeah, and well, that's everything that John
clerk,
just...
I said, the instructions that the clerk sent me, says, I must talk to you, not the clerk. She says, you're not telling the truth, which is a lie, because I was reading it right to her over the phone. This pro se attorney at the courthouse, I said, I'm reading it right to you, what the rules are. I'm supposed to speak to you, not a clerk.
Right.
And she says, you're not telling the truth, you got 30 seconds. I recorded all that, John.
Yeah,
so I got my 12-7 motion was the refuse curtain and the criminal charges against Saragusa and Telesco because he ditched my case from last year. That's why he's not my assigned case this year. In 2012 and 13, I didn't tell you that part yet. That's why I was suspicious why Telesco isn't my judge this time. He should have been because in pro se rules, whoever the judge you had in the last case, he's assigned to the next case, which is this one I had. So his case is missing, too. So here's the incredible story. My lawsuit against University of Rochester Medical Center, huge, right? I was getting correspondence from that court and a decision from Telesco saying your case is frivolous, but he gave a decision. I found out that the defendants were never even notified or officially notified of being sued. That's how fake it is. So anyway, so these employees, he's saying, Judge Saragusa, is the pro se attorney, one clerk, that answered me a letter that I said, are you having ex parte communication with the defendants in this case? She sends me a letter back saying, I can't answer your question. Then she scribbles her name, so I can't see her last name, and then... Before everything was removed, just recently, early in March, that was never put in the pacer. So, what Judge Saragusa says, well, you're impugning the court employees. Well, the court employees is including him and two other judges. And he wordsmiths everything around so you can't see it. So that's all I want to say. I'm taking up too much time for what other people want to talk to.
Yeah, we got to move on. And
sorry.
Part of the problem is if you had good media, you know, and you took it and they did an expose story on something like this, that's how that would get out. I mean, as far as working through the system, we discovered that you can't work through the system because they've actually completely dismantled that check and balance of the judicial oversight. They fired them all. They were more corrupt than the ones they were oversighting. So let's move on here to the next person because we've spent a lot of time there. Let's see. Who do we have? Kalama, let me unmute you there.
Hello from Hawaii. Oh,
hello. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. And my question is back to the sheriff's letter that is being prepared. Or I don't know. Is that a writ, a letter, or a press release?
No, I believe it's a letter which is going out. It's just a letter. It's not a writ or anything. It's an educational letter.
Well, we've been doing some extensive research, as Jason Berg mentioned, back to Anglo-Saxon times, and it appears that the role of the sheriff, you know, we can go back to the Sheriff of Nottingham and before that.
Well, just so you know, that the paper was done, ultimately, it's a paper. I tried to think of a better name. We can call it an information. As a matter of fact, I think we should file it with the courts as an information, the authority and the power of the sheriff, by what authority. And so maybe we will file it as an information, and that makes it more formal. And then we can put a seal on the end. We don't necessarily have to put a signature, but a seal on the end would give it a little more clout for the sheriff when he has it in his hands. And then the cover sheet will say that it was filed as an information. So that's what we should do.
That's brilliant. I'd also like to add this as part of our research that we've been doing, is that a number of years ago now, Orly Katz, who's very public and a pretty renowned figure, stated the role of a sheriff. She was challenged as to what a sheriff is. And so these emails that went out to Gerard and Sheila and you, John, and other people and the sheriffs of New Jersey, she states, and I think this is highly important, and if I were to say anything today, this is what I would most importantly want to add, is she states that it's little known, but the sheriffs, even though they're supposed to be for looking after local citizens and the property of local citizens throughout time, what has happened is, because of the growth of government, they also have the duty and the obligation to arrest as far up into the federal government as Attorney General and the President of the United States. This was a huge epiphany. I had read her work before, but then I did a very focused research. And I think besides foreclosing houses and stuff, and what struck me again is that while the sheriffs, some of them, a symbolic amount went to Washington, D.C. on December 10th, it was my understanding that some of them couldn't because they were foreclosing on houses and other such business, which really benefits the courts, the banks, the mortgage holders, and it really doesn't help the citizens very much. So if I were to be most pleased by this document, I really respect all the law cases that have been pulled together in it, and I would really think this is a profound thing that we educate the sheriff.
Why don't you get me a copy of that ASAP, and I'll see if I can
It's already been emailed to you.
Okay. Yeah, when did you email it?
Jason was in charge of that. He emailed it.
All right, Gerard, make sure I get a copy of that. Yeah, well, I didn't get it yesterday then. So.
Anyway, there is a highlight. What it is, it's a combination of a letter. It's informational, educational, as you are doing, and I think it's highly imperative. There is highlighted in blue the article by Orly Katz where she is challenged as to what the role of the sheriffs is. This is highly important because, to reiterate what Jason was saying, besides several years ago, as you mentioned, you know, the movement toward all the departments of the federal government being armed, all the departments signing on to the Department of Homeland Security, martial law, which is the case in both cases. Recently, Obama signed another enactment bill. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm having challenges here at this end in Hawaii. Yeah. An enactment bill was signed recently, and this is what Jason was attempting to say, that on the 24th of December, there is a further bill, a further illegal, unlawful, non-Congress, a few proof bill that states, as of December 24th, Obama, that on that date, the activation of the federalization of local police will occur. It doesn't mean it will occur, as your wisdom has stated. It's activated. So these bills have been sitting there, including all these martial law steps, have been sitting there And there's a huge game plan, as we know, and it's very complicated and convoluted. And as soon as we think something's going one way, then something we may have heard about as a rumor is activated and it becomes a real event.
Well, that's the
let
key.
Let me share this.
A major event. They need a major event to kick a lot of these things into throttle. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
And one of the things that we're doing concerning this problem is revealing. Okay. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs, which is in the beginning of our information. Which again. We'll read this in full information on hopefully next Monday. If we can get agreement to all the states tomorrow evening at our meeting that everybody can start working on this and we'll get them out. If not, we'll get them out actually next weekend, right after between Christmas and New Year's. So then on Monday we'll read the whole thing. But basically it talks about... disarmament in the name of the international security, which is acts of treason. And we write here, on September 25th, 2013, in an act of war against the unalienable rights of the people protected by the amendment, Second Amendment, against the will of we the people, and without the consent of Congress, Secretary of State John Kerry signed the controversial United States Arms Treaty, surrendering our Second Amendment to foreign powers, inimical to liberty. On September 24, 2014, while addressing the UN General Assembly concerning the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty in an act of war against the unalienable rights of the people protected by the Second Amendment against the will of we the people, President Obama said that all nations must meet our responsibility to observe and enforce international norms, yielding his oath of office to foreign powers. On December 24, 2014, Christmas Eve, the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty will be binding on all the nations that have ratified, that is, signed it. And John Kerry has signed it a year ago. Under fiction of law, the treaty provides the basis for additional gun regulations in America under the guise of necessity. And then, of course, we have two quotes. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. William Pitt the Younger. And they that can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Benjamin Franklin. Now that's the first page, the introduction part of the first page of the paper that we wrote. It's 10 pages. And we'd love to file it between Christmas and New Year's. Of course, we'll correct the timing because the way we wrote this is that it was going to be because we thought we'd get this out before. But we'll get it out after. But the whole thing is we the people are going to hold it null and void. It has no effect. Don't even think about coming to get our guns. And we have tremendous amounts. Almost the entire thing is just filled with nothing but quotes of our founding fathers. And great Americans, contemporary Americans of our day.
Well, yeah, I really stand behind this educational process to the max. This list of the duties of the sheriffs to educate them is, I think, highly, highly important. The sheriffs don't even know some of their basic duties, as you yourself have discovered. And furthermore, the replies of sheriffs recently in the nation, I'm going to bring up very, very quickly to make room for other people to speak. There is one sheriff who was challenged, and Jason Berg has a list of these research pieces that he can make available. They've been saved on sheriffs across the nation. And, of course, Sheriff Arpaio is one of the most notable sheriffs. And he has sued Obama on amnesty and illegal aliens. He had also put forth the ineligibility of President Obama in as much as he's not born of two natural parents, both of the born in the United States. And I have further personally done research and proven, and it has been proven by others, that he is not born in the United States. He is an ineligible, illegal fraud president.
Okay. I believe that 60, if not more, percent of the American people already know this. And and anybody who will pay attention to the definition of a natural-born citizen will have to agree that he's not the president of the United States, because he doesn't qualify, because his father was not an American citizen.
Yeah, and I would like to further support this, and anyone who may be listening, since I live in Hawaii, I've done extensive research on this particular topic. Obama's real father is still unclear. His records are sealed. We know some of his records have been leaked. His college records, for instance, list him. His college card for Barry Solotaro says foreign student. He got a foreign student grant. He has used a false Social Security number. He has messed around with Selective Service. His birth certificate that was so supposedly issued, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but supposedly issued by Mrs. Fuddy, head of the Hawaii Health Department, was also initiated by former Governor Abercrombie, thrown out of office in the last election, the first incumbent governor ever tossed out of office, second term in the United States. Mrs. Fuddy was also leader of the Subud organization, deeply embedded in the United Nations, and she is the one who issued the fake birth certificate of Obama. And it's been proven by a number of different experts that it's 100% fake. You can see the fake online. Later, after Mrs. Fuddy was killed, I say she did not die in a plane crash, because it's been proven otherwise. Mrs. Fuddy was head of the Subud organization inside the United Nations, with whom Ann Durham, Obama's mother, supposed mother, and his grandmother, who was high in the CIA, second in command in the Bank of Hawaii, she knew these people in Chicago, Indonesia, and Honolulu. Mrs. Fuddy was killed. She was the main witness to Obama's birth, or illegal fake birth in Hawaii. After her death, buried in a newspaper in Hawaii, a 1 to 2 inch tiny article with a picture of not even a top person from the health department. The health department of Hawaii, and you will not hear this even from Judge Sheriff Arpaio, and many birthers. The Health Department of Hawaii admitted that Obama is not born in Hawaii. Well, he's not born in the United States. It was slipped out. He might have been born in Kenya. He may have been born in Indonesia, and his true father may not be the Kenyan father, nor Marshall White, the failed communist living in Honolulu, nor the founder of the Subud organization. The Subud organization, Indonesian father is most likely. He's probably not even black. He's probably Indonesian. His facial features and his anatomy do not match the Kenyan father. They do not match the failed communist Marshall White. They most match the Subud founder. Now, I'm not going to say any more than that, but let me go back to early Tatt's statement about what the duties of a sheriff are, and I plead with you to please put this in. To put this in would be a huge, to not put this in, the education of the sheriffs, at least, would be a huge error. This is how a sheriff can take out the person from office in the highest office of the land of POTUS. A foreign combatant. That's a foreign combatant usurper. The research I have done supports all of these words, foreign combatant usurper. One, Obama is foreign. Two, he's a combatant inasmuch he's aided, armed, and abetted, and financed at least the Muslim Brotherhood, and we know Hamas, and ISIS. Is ISIL, and now they've changed the name again of ISIS to keep everybody confused, I guess. Obama's wanted for crimes against humanity via command of the Egyptian government. He's wanted for crimes against humanity for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in every way, manner, and speaking. he's not only a combatant, a foreign combatant, but he is also a leader, a global leader now in supporting terrorist jihad. And it's appearing that maybe even in the United States. Now, let me go further. He is a usurper. Well, if he's done both of these other things, that leads to being usurping the president for agenda that is not to the benefit of the both defending the Constitution, his oath of office to the Constitution, or his duty to the American people. He is a usurper also because inconsistencies in the campaign, funding, and also in ballot box. Inconsistencies get people voting for him, people voting double for him, whether he's done it from the top or from the side. So all of these points are covered. All of these points make it the duty of the sheriffs to arrest him in numbers or one of them. And so that's my point of view and my one way or another, whether it ever happens, and I think to have justice rule, it should happen. I don't think he can be held for treason. I don't think he should be impeached for several other reasons, which I won't go into now. I think he should be arrested as an enemy of the United States.
I don't know that we want to continue. I understand what you're saying, and I think this is a future conversation. More better served than now.
Okay, but my final point is, okay. I think it would be a big disservice to the sheriffs if they didn't know.
Well, absolutely. Look, I'm going to get a copy of the paper, and I'll go through it, and I'll draw out what I can, and once I do that, I'll make contact with you to see what you think, if I've, put it in sufficient enough to
I'm
make
available
the point.
In public or private, in the meetings or...
yeah, I can get a hold of you. So.
Thank you. Aloha.
Okay, aloha.
Okay. Next question. Let me take Kalana out. And 7517, I don't have a name, just tell us your name. And what state?
This is Somat Wadai. I'm calling from On, Arizona. Good evening to you all.
Hey, nice to have
blessed
you.
Blessed are the peacekeepers, for they will be called the sons of God. And we'll be protected by divine providence. One of the things I'd like to say real quickly is we understand, we talk about the Declaration of Independence, and for the support of the Declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. One of the things that one's been really, really doing a lot of research on for a very long time is the establishment of the use of fraud, the right that they've done by Operation Law and Constructive Fraud. So I just wanted to make a quick statement on 12 U.S.C. 95A Part 2. If anybody hasn't heard of this, I'll go ahead and read this real quick. Any payment, conveyance, transfer, assignment, delivery of property or interest therein made to or for the account of the United States is otherwise directed pursuant to this section of any rule or any rule, regulation, instruction, or direction issued to the owner, shall to the extent therein be full acquittance and discharge for all purposes of the obligation of the person making the same, and no person shall be held liable in any court for or in respect to anything done or admitted in good faith in connection with the administration of or pursuance of or reliance on this section or any rule, regulation, instruction, direction issued hereunder. Basically, how these people have gotten away with this has all been done under contract law. And us not knowing any better, we've abandoned our birthrights by the simple fact that the operation of law and constructive fraud that took place by placing this all into Washington, D.C. and making us infant decedents. So until we realize that we need to stand together under this Declaration of Independence, because the Declaration of Independence is just one little aspect of it. Because when we realize the fact that the Declaration of the Public Trust, which is created by a proclamation by Abraham Lincoln on November 19, 1863, we have all become trust protectors. So when a trust protector comes forward, he's made the pledge to the Declaration of Independence, he's now protecting the trust of the United States. And anyone who's usurping or doing whatever under the guises of the color of law in anything other than the District Court of the United States is fraud. So anyway,
well, we agree 100% with that, and they tried to hide. You know, it's really amazing. They must have really dumbed us down real well. Of course, it was hidden for a long time, but they have dumbed the people down that many people haven't really even come to this point to realize their fraud is hidden. They claim that their power and their authority comes from Article 1, Section 8, paragraphs 17 and 18, and that's insane. It's total insanity. And that is where they created this District of Columbia and this whole fraud system and everything prior to it that led up to it and everything since it. And all their acts of fiction is all resting on something that is absurd. I mean, anybody who reads it with any common sense sees they didn't have the authority.
It's just like the war on terror is all resting on a false flag operation that happened on September 11th. You know, The name is protected because it's an agricultural state. It demands protection because of international obligations under Article 55 of the Hague of 1907, the treaty, which is an administrative usufruct. And Part 3138 of the Lieber Code, or Lieber Code, and by extension, one is protected because one uses the name out of necessity, on the law of necessity. So when we understand what happened as an operation of law and constructive fraud at the event and issue of us coming into this world, we were adopted into a foreign nation, a host, if you want to call it, and that foreign nation has run rickshaw over us until we realize really the only place you can really get any type of remedy whatsoever is in the District Court of the United States, and not the United States District Court. And even at that, invoking that a lot of times raises a lot of ire. You have these clerks of court that look at you and go, huh? I don't know what that is. What's the District Court of the United States? When you look at the opinion letter from the Attorney General in 1867, as well as the a letter that was written in, it's called the Currency Question. It was written back in 1865. The control of our whole domestic commerce was therefore entirely in the hands of foreigners who were from hour to hour becoming richer by means of compelling us to remain so dependent upon them that they could always fix the prices in which they would use to buy the skin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what we have is we've been invaded by a foreign foe. Under the 1958 congressional hearing in domestic on un-American domestic activities, the Congress realized, it came to the conclusion, and it was found that the American Bar Association and the National Lawyers Guild were front for the Communist Party. Well, you know, they changed things so quickly in this world of fiat, this world of fraud. So you've got the Vatican coming down, which everything is under a Jesuit ecclesiastical office in every type of place where the so-called Commonwealth is existing, Canada, the United States of America, Australia, South Africa, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, we agree with all that. It's not really all that necessary to understand it in the depth that you understand it. The whole the bottom line is everything they're doing is fraud, and it's all fiction. They have no authority. They're guilty of treason, and they need to pay for their crime at some point in time, and they will.
Well, John, one of the things that I've been working on with some folks here, I've been working with a couple private attorney generals. We developed a bounty bond, an indemnification bond, and a salvage bond because basically what happened is we need to come in under the salvage bond and salvage the United States of America. Issued for cause due to insurrection and rebellion, acts of actions under color of law and authority, treason, misprison, enticement into slavery. Trustees based on tort, you know, they're operating as either executor based on tort or the trustee based on tort. And under 2683 of Title 18, you know, it's insurrection, rebellion against the laws of the United States. Then we have, you know, deprivation of rights, we've got federally protected activities, enticement and slavery, treason, this prison rebellion, this prison of treason, on and on and on and on. But here's the thing. If these people, if these sheriffs knew that there were people behind them who've indemnified them for you know, against these people who have enacted crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, war crimes, complicity in the commission of crimes against the peace, and crimes against humanity, It would seem to me that it might be something that might break the ice.
Well, that's exactly the point, and that's exactly where we're heading with. We have to prime the pump, that is, educate the sheriff. And then we have to lay it out flat, straight, you know, plain on paper what needs to be done and why, and give all of the lay out all of the problems so that as soon as they get to that point that they can understand that, that's when they can act. And they may be timid in acting, but the point is if you educate them to understand what they're doing, what these people are doing is a crime, and not only a crime, but tyranny, and a very serious problem. It's subversion of the United States of America, ultimately, is what they're doing. And if the sheriff is able to see that, he will act, and the marshal will act, and the FBI will act, and even the military. But we have to be careful with the military, because the military cannot get directly involved with this. It can only be a backup to the sheriff, and he would have to act under the sheriff, because it's a very dangerous thing for the military to try to do anything to correct anything in this country. Extremely dangerous. We don't want that to happen at all. It's just too serious a problem, and I think we'll talk more about this in great in-depth, maybe 6 weeks down the line.
These bonds, this indemnification bond, salvage bond, bounty bond, and liquidation bond were in the form of an open letter to the postmaster, which, by all intents and practical purposes, is the highest man on the land. He's higher than the office of president. The Treasury, IRS, DOJ is all under the postmaster. So these were open letters to the postmaster, Patrick O'Donohue. And they had 10 days which to answer pursuant to Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 8B6. And by their acquiescence, they've gone silent. So by their silence, they've agreed. And therefore, these bounty bonds, indemnification bonds, salvage bonds, and liquidation bonds are in place. So, and this, you know, falls under the general orders of number 100 of 1863, which comes right out of the Lieber Code. So, you know, when you're looking at tools in your tool belt for these acts of insurrection rebellion against the people of the United States, see, the problem is the president is administering the abandoned trust that the people have abandoned in this country. They should have made the claim by acknowledgement or by claiming the birthright. I did a process. I'll share this real briefly, and I'll shut up. I took a birth certificate that reflected the event and the issue that happened on the state of Florida. I asked the Secretary of State of Florida to certify the document. He did so. I sent it to the Department of State and asked them for certification for the country of Taiwan. When I received the document back, under seal of the Secretary of State and under seal of the registrar, they recognized full faith and credit. Does anybody understand the significance of that?
Well, yeah, again, you know, that gets a little more difficult, and we don't have to get that complex, although that will become part of the mechanisms and part of, you know, court cases and being able to deal with these problems. And also, you know, I don't know how deep we can get into this because, again, a lot of people don't understand it. I'm not saying that I even completely understand all of it. But nevertheless, I mean, we got CESQ funds out there, which, of course, is all illegal. The whole process, the whole system is illegal. You've got investments of money that's come from the courts. Properties and accounts that belong to the people out there. And people are totally unaware of this, and all the bonds that they're supposed to have, and the bonds that they can be held accountable for. Again, this is the only way America is going to be able to deal with all of the injury. And I don't even know how much we want to get into this conversation at this moment, to be honest with you. I think this is a future conversation.
I would just like to say real quick, anyone's been following the Capper account.
The Capper accounts is the same. That's exactly what I was talking about. I was looking for the name of that. But, yeah, that's where they have all these properties and all these accounts that literally own islands. But, again, you know, we've looked at this. We're thinking about it. If you want to give me a call privately and talk a little more about it, but I don't think it's good prime time conversation at this moment in time because I think you understand why.
Yes, because we want to stay on track. The most important thing of this is the common law is based upon common reasoning. Common reasoning is the universal law of the land. They're basically ten
common sense under principles. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. And everybody understands what a principle is, you know, honor, justice, and mercy, and common sense applied to that, and you got that. So it's all you need to know about law.
Exactly. All right, John. Well, thank you so much. And again, this is So Much with Diane. I'm on Yavapai County on Arizona.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Be well.
You too.
Well.
God bless. Gerard, you with us? Yeah.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if I was double muted here. Let's see. Let me mute him. I don't know why this stupid button is hesitating here.
Well, you're unmuting people. Hold on a minute. This is let me mute that person back. This is what you want to do. Click
the
on.
The next question doesn't work.
Sure, watch.
It never switches for me.
There it is.
Yeah, well, that's your button. That ain't my button.
Well,
okay.
Did you turn your conference on?
Yeah, it comes on when you turn it on. I don't. It just
yeah. But if
on.
You look to the left, does it say live conference? Well, you should. It should. If you're seeing all this stuff, it should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's on. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
That's
so
why it doesn't work for you. Maybe it doesn't like you.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I can't talk about them right now. No.
Okay.
So who we have here? We have New York Walt. Go ahead. Oh, 160. I don't have my glasses on. I could hang on. New York Walt. 0160. Are you there?
Yes, you had. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I talked to you earlier.
Oh, well, maybe John opened. She hit his next button and he said it was the next guy. It went back. Yeah, because look, Kalama's here. All right, let me mute you again. The next one up is Rhodes, Demers. Hang on, let me unmute you. Let's see what it says here. Next question.
Let me try to push some of these people out because you've already hit them. So you're finished with Walt because I got disconnected for a second.
Yeah, Walt's done and Kalama.
Okay,
is
Kalama's
done.
I'll get rid of him. How about Rhodes?
Rhodes is who's open now. He's next.
Okay.
4871.
Hi, this is Morrison from Indiana.
There you go.
I have some questions to ask, and I also have a word of encouragement for you, if you like.
We love encouragement.
I heard from the Lord, and he said, this land has been lost to the heathen, and I will restore it. So you're headed in the right direction. You're doing what you need to do to the best of your ability. For those who are walking in faith, you'll have more security than those that are just doing it because it's the right thing to do. So I will encourage everyone to dig into the things of the spirit realm so that you can do a better job carrying your own load. And my question is concerning, you've said something about the demand statement for getting into court. And where do I find it? The libraries aren't revealing it to me. Where do I find the demand statement to get into court on common law?
What do you mean by demand statement? I'm not sure.
You mentioned it a couple months back about getting into court, not having to pay extortion for paying to get into court. And I need
there's one process you could take, and it just gets a little complicated, but it is what it is. You go fill your paper out, you file your papers, you take it down to the clerk, and they reject it. You want to get it on record if you can. Nevertheless, a sworn affidavit is sufficient enough of their rejecting of your paperwork. You then go down to the federal court, and you file
a little bit. What court are you talking about filing? Because I'm supposed to be going into the federal court.
Oh, well, when you go into the federal court, you shouldn't have a problem at all getting in there for free. I've only been there a couple of times, but I haven't had a problem either time. And basically, you go in there with your paperwork. You have to have a file on demand. A file on demand.
Okay, how paper do I get with, a file on demand? Where do I find one? What is it?
Well, you can go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and you can highlight books, essays, and lectures, and you can click on court case examples, and you should file one there. And it's a one-page paper. You'll see it pretty much, the statements on all of our papers anyway, in the front page. And bottom line is you take your papers and you keep your file on demand out. You hold that back. And you file the papers. They're going to ask you, and you've got to fill out all the necessary forms. It's basically, filing out the paper in order to make your filing. It's just filing. And once you file it with the courts, they're going to ask you, well, okay, that's going to cost you. It's going to cost $400. I think that's what the federal courts cost. And you say, no, I'm one of the people. I don't pay. And they're going to look at you a little strange, maybe, I don't know. But they'll say, okay, you're going to have to fill out one of these forms. And you say, no, I'm one of the people. I don't fill out forms either. And that's when you hand them the file on demand. And that is what was worked for me. And usually they take that, they look at it, then they stamp it through and give you your copies and stamp your filed copies, and you go your way.
Okay, I hope I got all that. I don't have shorthand, okay? So what I'm doing is going in and attempting to file it. And if they demand that I pay, then I'm supposed to tell them I'm one of the people, and then I'm supposed to...
Yeah, you just say, look, I'm one of the people. I don't pay for this. Only corporations pay. I'm not a corporation.
Yeah, that's...
And they're going to bypass. They're going to ignore that part. And they're going to say, okay, you'll have to fill out this form, which they call a poor man's form or whatever BS form they want to call it. It doesn't matter. I tell them, I'm not filling that paper out. I'm one of the people. This is my court. I'm filing these papers. You have to take it. Here's the file on demand. Then you give them the file on demand on top of your paper, and it pushes through.
Okay. They give the file on demand after all the other. Okay.
Yeah, once they ask for the paper to be signed. You see, what you're doing, by giving...
You talked about it, but you didn't tell what to replace it with,
yeah.
what word that should be used. And also the plaintiff.
Yeah, listen. What you're doing when you're giving them the file on demand, okay, is you're helping the clerk. Because the clerk has been told not to accept things without the money. And not to go outside of the process that they've been taught. But they're not, at the federal level, they're a little more intelligent than that. Okay, and they know that they really have to file it. But... You know, unless you push in the right way, they're gonna uphold the will of the judge, and they're not gonna listen to you, and so that's where the file on demand is the law, okay? What's written on that file on demand is the law. You're gonna go to jail up to 1 to 3 years, clerk, if you don't obey the law, and that's what you're putting before them. They like to get that, then they can file it, then they can turn to their boss, who really isn't their boss, but he acts like they're the boss, and that's the judge. And say to the judge, look, I have no choice. and that's that.
Okay. I believe that's about all I have for right now. I appreciate the help. Now, make sure I understand how to find it on the site. I've been coming to your site and listening and studying. You find it in the essays, did you say?
Highlight books, essays, and lectures, and then click on court case examples.
Click on court case.
Examples.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All righty. Okay, Gerard, try clicking it now. See if it works for you. Did you click it? There it goes. It worked. Gerard? You there? Lee, go right ahead. We got your call.
I guess I had my headset muted, yeah. I saw it went that time.
Okay.
Missouri,
Lee
Rob.
All right, hello. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
All right, I am glad I finally got through here. I have had something on my mind lately, and I want to try to bring this to you guys in a way where it doesn't cause a fight or an argument, or I just need you to hear me and try to understand what myself and some other people may be feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, tonight, for the time I've been on here, it's been real good about not having a bunch of Christian stuff on here. I'm not Christian, and it really irks me to spend 45 minutes or more on here trying to be force-fed for some Christian stuff that I don't believe in. And I don't feel like it's a place that welcomes everybody from all backgrounds. To win this war, we need everybody on board. I followed along with Tim Turner's movement, and the Christians turned that into just a circus that eventually fell apart. And how that showed up was the Christian people didn't want to talk to anybody that wasn't Christian. So you'd call somebody and they wouldn't call you back. And all of the other Christian stuff that goes on. And I don't want it in my government. I don't want to be around it. I don't think there's a place for it in government. I want to feel welcome here. And there's some things that I've learned about Christianity over the years. One, I think it was invented by the same people that brought us this war that we're fighting against right now. What Christian holiday is Christian? There are none. They're all pagan. The early Romans stole a pagan religion. They murdered everybody that wouldn't go along with their lie, just the same as they're doing today. And now, it kind of feels like there's a hidden agenda here, like it fell with Turner's movement. You know, we're going
right.
to convert
well, look
this.
Look it. Hold on a minute. Yeah, listen, we appreciate what you're saying, and you don't have to be involved in anybody's belief system, but everybody has the right and to express their belief system. If someone is a Muslim and they talk about Allah because it's part of their life, that's their prerogative, that's their liberty, and God bless them. And if you're a Jew and you want to bring up Jehovah, or if you're a Christian and you want to bring up Jehovah or Christ, this is your right. If you're an atheist and you don't want to talk and you don't want to express a religious belief or a belief in any kind of a being, or if you're one of those people that believe in something more of a cosmic way and that's how you want to believe, look, at the, people have the right. We're a mixed bag of people, and we have to respect each other's belief systems. We have to respect what people want to express about themselves. Now, it's true, we all do not want to be bombarded with someone else's belief system. I kind of appreciate that. But, you know, you can't say that look, a lot of bad things have been done in the name of Christianity. A lot of bad things. I mean, most of history is filled with evil stuff that's done by people who claim to be Christian. Well, obviously, they weren't followers of Christ. Anybody who knew Christ, the two major commandments that God gave is to love your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And the second one is like unto the first, to love your neighbor as yourself for the love of God. Now, if anybody's living under that, they're not going to do evil things in the name of Christianity. It's given a bad name. Look at the anger of God is going to be upon America and upon this entire world because of that, first and foremost. Judgment begins and has already began in the house of God, in other words, in the corporate churches, where those people in the name of God, in the name of Christ, are doing wrong. But you can't put all Christians into that same box, just like you can't put all Muslims into the box that the political realms of our country are doing. They're saying, well, Muslims are A, B, and C. They're terrorists. They're no good. They're evil. They want Sharia law. They want that. That's not true. That's not true at all. It's a lie. We're just boxing everybody into a box, so we can't do that. Now, our founding fathers, now let me just finish, and I'm going to let you talk some more. Our founding fathers, if you were on in the beginning of our program, I read out of a book, The Making of America, and I'd read out of this once before concerning the position of the founder and ultimately kind of the creator, but the founder of America, which was Jefferson. And Franklin, of course, had a huge play in it, and many, many others, even of course, Washington and others. They had very, 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 very strong Christian beliefs. Now, America was created under the ancient principles, and Jefferson speaks of eight ancient principles, and they come out of Mosaic law. That's back to the Bible, the first five books of the Bible. And as a matter of fact, we read earlier today, you know, when we started this, concerning the state United States seal that Franklin wanted it to represent ancient Israel, to portray that by having Moses standing on the shore extending his hand over the seas. Okay, and he goes on to express more imagery on that seal, and that's what his thought and idea was for the seal. Jefferson had something similar. And he talked about that he wanted to see something with the children of Israel in the wilderness, led by the cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And that's what he wanted on the United States seal. And this is where the discussions went. But things kind of got held off track. And eventually, many, many years later, we ended up with a pyramid with the all-seeing eye. And we know what that means. Because they're trying to say, we've already taken over your nation. We're already inside the door. We're inside the gates of Troy already. We're here, and we got control, and we're watching you. We see everything. We know everything. And of course, they try to say, well, that all-seeing eye is supposed to represent God, and of course, it doesn't. So you can't say that Christianity wasn't a major role in the creation of what we have. And the founding fathers believed that as long as they, matter of fact, Jefferson spoke of this in great detail. He believed, and they believed, that as long as we were operating under the will of God, we would be a blessed nation. And he looked to Israel to see how for 400 years, when Israel came out of Egypt and God delivered them through Moses, and they got to the promised land, they went for 400 years of liberty and 400 years without any tyranny or any major problems. They were very peaceful and a happy people. Of course, they had wars and different things going on, but they were victorious in all things. And it was only when they started to move away from the principles. Jefferson discovered eight particular principles that he held up, and he expressed it in the Declaration of Independence, and he also expressed it in the, it was expressed in the preamble to the United, to the Constitution for the United States of America. So again, those eight principles were expressed in both of those places. It is the foundation of our country or our nation. We can't ignore that. And those of us who are Christian, we believe, and along with Jews and Muslims and all others that hold to the two great commandments, love God and love your neighbor, and truly have a heart towards doing the right thing, having a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy, all of us together, collectively, should be in agreement that we must hold up the law of God. And the law of God is through Mosaic law, and Christ summarized it in two sentences: love God, love your neighbor. Now, no one could go against that. Now, we're not here preaching. I'm going to finish in one more minute. We're not here preaching any particular doctrine. We're not here preaching a religion, but we are acknowledging God. I acknowledge Him in my life, and I'm going to acknowledge Him in public. I'm going to acknowledge Him in private. I'm not going to force people into a Bible study. If they want to come to one, they're welcome to, but they don't have to. We don't do that here on Monday nights. And on the other hand, but we do acknowledge God. We do read His Word because we believe that it is the Word of God. And all the things that we read, even if you are an atheist, if you listen very carefully, I got to believe you agree. We want people to have certain attributes. We want them to be honorable. We want them to be honest. We want them to be truthful. So we want them to have a sense of honor, a sense of justice. And we also want them to be merciful. We're not on a witch hunt. And this, whether you're an atheist, whether you're an agnostic, whether you're a Christian Jew, or whether you're a Muslim or a Buddhist or whatever, if we can agree on those principles and agree on those terms to acknowledge God as the creator, as our founding fathers were very careful not to mention the name of God. They could have said, they could have gave the name of Christ. They could have gave the name of Jehovah. They could have gave, but they didn't. They called it nature's God. Okay? And that was acceptable to all religions, so they tried not to insult other people. But you will find that they did say that the Christian religion is the religion most friendly that will accept everyone into them, everyone. Now, any Christian who wouldn't accept other people of other faiths to live with them, to work with them, and to, you know, talk, just be friendly with them and consider each other as human beings, anybody that's a Christian that rejects that is not a Christian, they're a liar. So, but anyway, go ahead, if you want
to. Religion preaches not to do that anyway, John. It's one God. That's what Christianity teaches.
Yes,
so that automatically sets up Christians. It's one God, you know, Jesus God. And that automatically sets up the belief system that...
No. God is the way you perceive him.
God can't be any different from our God.
Well, hold it. Let's step back.
You cannot believe in freedom of religion and believe in Christianity. And you if you don't believe in freedom of religion, you should throw that Constitution away or burn it.
Well, you're right. I believe in freedom of religion.
You can't. And be a Christian, they're diametrically opposed.
Not at all. The whole world is not going to be Christian. God did not create the whole world with 100% faith. Look, we're in a place where the knowledge of good and evil is found, and I don't know how it all works, but obviously there is a lot of differences between people, okay? And there are people that believe different things, but God, I'll tell you what, you go into the Bible and you read the Bible, it talks about in the New Testament. It says, you know, if you believe in Jesus for his work's sake, in other words, he was a good man, you're going to be rewarded for that, whatever that is. If you believe him for being a prophet, okay, you get a prophet's reward, and whatever that is. But the point is that there's a blessing for everybody that acknowledges or accepts the Christian religion, just like there's a blessing for everyone that's a Christian that acknowledges anyone else's religion. Look, it's a two-way street because the world is diverse. We're not all the same, and we have to grow up and be able to accept each other. You know, we've made a big thing recently on the emails that people should not be putting all of this stuff, whether it be religion or political views or anything, in emails if they're coordinators or organizers and they got access to the mail and they're sending people mail. They can't be doing all those things. But if they have a signature at the end that has a Bible verse or expresses a feeling or a religious point of view, that's their prerogative. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you're an atheist and you wanted to express something, that's your prerogative. If you're agnostic or, you know, whatever you are, it doesn't matter. Express what you want. But we can't force anyone to be silent, and we can't force anyone to believe anything, and we shouldn't. What we should be doing is working with each other to come to an agreement under a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's where we can cross all lines, agnostic, atheist, Jew, Gentile, it doesn't matter. We can all agree on those three things, because those are, and we all agree that that's a godly attributes. Those are godly attributes. So those are good things. However you understand God, that's your business. And if you and I wanted to get together and talk about God, I'd be willing to do that with you. And if you don't want to, that's fine. But the bottom line...
I don't mind sharing, but when there's only one way, the whole Christian religion preaches there's one way. They've murdered 650 million people in the last couple thousand years.
Let me talk.
I let you talk. Now let me talk.
Well, look, I just muted you, and I'll unmute you in a second. Look, I'm not going to let you talk, because what you're saying is you're boxing together all of Christianity. Look, there are a lot of phony Christians out there. Most people that claim to be Christian are not Christian. That's a fact, and I'm a Christian, and I'm saying it. The same thing with Muslims. Most people who claim to be Muslims, you know, are the extremist is the minimum amount of people. It's not the maximum amount. The problem is people box everybody in a box. They say bad things about the Jews. They say bad things about the Muslims. Now they say bad things about Christians. They say bad things about even atheists. Look, I'm not going to say bad things about anyone, and neither should you. So the bottom line is you can't say that Christianity is bad because of a group of people who have hijacked the religion and have taken control. And you can look back in history, you're absolutely right. More evil has been done in the name of Jesus Christ or in the name of God, Jehovah, than anything else in the world. But those people are not of God. They're liars. And so you can't make all of us be that. We're not.
And look, you know, as far as, like, let's say atheist goes or agnostic or anything like that, in this country, one of the main premises that we believe in is that you don't get your rights from a man. You get them from a above man. And that's the important thing, that there is no man doing this. And so if you don't believe that there's a supreme being, that there's a force outside of men, outside of what we have control over, then it would be very hard for you to cow to our position that we have rights that no man can usurp. And so, look, I know agnostics, I know people that don't believe in God per se. They say they don't believe, or they say they maybe believe in something else that's not really God the way we think of him, but the bottom line is they are living the benefits of that belief in this country. They're being protected by that, by living here, and they don't make bones over it, because unless you hold men to a higher standard, men will degrade down. You have to have a standard above them, and our forefathers knew that. So we have unalienable rights. That come from where? They come from a God. Now, do we want to discuss who that God is? That's another story. Jefferson said the God, nature is God, and the God of nature, and nature is God. You don't need to go any further than that. But listen, they prayed. Then when they opened their thing, I mean, Washington's farewell address, that was like, you might as well have been in church. You know what I mean? So that's what this country was founded on. And that's not what the problem with this country was. The problem with this country was is when they got away from that. And we could show that for sure, because they went into the religion of man. They made man more powerful than God.
Religious persecution.
Listen, you have free will. You have free will. You don't have you're free to believe or not believe, but you don't have the freedom. You're still held accountable when you don't do the things that you ought to do. By committing a sin of omission or whatever it is you want to say, when there's something that needs to be done and you don't do it, when the guy's laying in the ditch and you walk by and you let him die, that's on you. You know what I mean? And that's a higher thing than just a constitution. You know, you have to understand that principle if you're gonna move through our system, and it's gonna work. It's gonna work because we're basing it on the Judeo-Christian and the what was it, the ones that came across the fathers there, the ancient fathers that met the Jews, John.
Oh, you're talking about the Anglo-Saxons?
Yeah, the Anglo-Saxons. So between
right. That's a very good point, the Anglo-Saxons, because the Anglo-Saxons didn't have any kind of religion at all, and they had no connection to the Bible whatsoever.
Right.
And Jefferson was amazed by that. And I got to tell you, when I was studying this myself, I was amazed by that, and I was wondering, how was that connection made? And it was about, 400 or 500 AD, when they were already in England, they were establishing a rule under the mind of God, and that was their principle. That was what they were trying to set up, as a rule under God and not to be ruled by men. And they were trying to figure a logical way to do it, and they came up with principles and ideas, and they brought the grand jury, they brought the jury system into play into England, as a matter of fact. And so when the Anglo-Saxons came to England and they found the Bible, they fused to the Bible, and the Bible became their principal position of law and order. And when you go read the Magna Carta, it's like every other word talks about God in there. And so that's our foundation. That's where we come from. We come from the ancient principles, and the ancient principles ultimately were the ancient Israel principles back under Mosaic law. So
anything to do with Christianity was paganism before Rome murdered
okay.
all the pagans.
Well, that you've been watching too much, history TV. But anyway, is there anything else?
What is the holiday of Easter?
Look at. I agree. Easter of course.
You have no respect for me either.
But everything that is good, evil,
can
is placed
I speak?
Over. But not if you're going to be destructive. Go ahead.
I have been as troubled by religion as anybody, and I have studied some of the history of it, and what I have found are none of the Christian holidays are they Christian. Easter, that was the goddess of Esther,
right.
or
but
something
for the
like
real
that,
Christian,
the fertility
no,
god.
I,
but for the real Christian, it was a resurrection. It was a resurrection
for millennia before Christianity came by and stole it and claimed it as theirs and murdered everybody that wouldn't go along with it.
Look at that. That may or may not be true by false Christians, but it has nothing to do with true Christians. And I will tell you that when we do celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that we're pretty accurate to the date. The problem is you got to keep pushing it to a Sunday. And the reason you push it to a Sunday is because, you know, he rose on the first day of the week. And that was the changing of from the Sabbath to the Sabbaths. So that's why, you know, and however Easter got involved in there, I've heard a lot of stories. That has nothing to do. We don't celebrate an Easter bunny. We don't celebrate the fertility goddess. I don't get involved in that.
Listen, what you guys are all forgetting is that there's powers and principalities that our fight is against. And they've been here since the first man, since before the first man, when the devil was thrown onto earth. Now, he was a very smart dude. He knew Christ was going to come and die. He knew all this stuff. He knows the Bible better than you do or I do. So what's he do? He sets up religions, these pagan religions, that have a god of fertility, knowing that there's going to be a Christian religion and that this Savior is going to be born. And he sets all this stuff ahead of time so guys like you, 2,000 years, can come back later and say, look, that's not Christian. That's the god of the fertility. Well, that's all bullshit. That was all put up ahead of time. It's a what do you call it? It's a big lie. Because what he does is he gives you a little bit of truth and he mixes it with a lie. And so that's I'm telling you, yes, I'm telling you that's where that stuff comes from. If you're gonna believe in powers and
principles in the manger story, the 12 disciples, you can trace every part of that Christian religion back very easily 5,000 or 6,000
okay.
years.
All right. We appreciate
now,
you calling. Is there anything
ago,
else? We don't want to talk about religion. We don't want to talk about religion. We agree with you. So let's move on. Do you have another question or a comment that you'd like to talk about and keep it on point? Because you're the one that's bringing us to the discussion of religion. We don't do that here, but you have managed to do that by complaining about it and then bringing it to the floor,
right.
And now we're discussing it. So we're going to leave that alone. No religion. So is there any other question or comment you'd like to make? You're welcome.
Am I muted or am I unmuted?
No, you're unmuted now. Yeah.
What I wanted to ask you for on this call is to not blow the Christian dogma in my face. You know, there's things that work for everybody, like you said, a natural God. There's a moment of silence.
There's a number of things that seem to work pretty well for all religions. I am tired of showing up on this call and getting force-fed with Christian dogma.
Okay. All right, well, I don't go around preaching the Bible here in this program. Everyone knows that I am a Christian. Everybody knows that I act from faith, or at least they should realize that I'm acting by faith. And I promise you, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't a Christian. Christianity led me to this place. I didn't want to take this position on. I certainly didn't want to make a national movement. I had to be dragged into the national movement. I tried to get other states to do it on their own. I'm here because of principles, and I'm here because of the founding of this country was founded under God. The Judeo-Christian religion is what it was founded under. It's the principles of the Bible, which Jefferson spoke of as the ancient principles, 8 particularly that he discovered that he felt enough to put it into the Declaration of Independence, and also found its way into the preamble of the United States, the Constitution for the United States. And I'm not finished. Washington said that he will not be king. We have to go to King God. God is the king. We have unalienable rights. We have a nation by consent of the people, and the people have to be ruled by God. There is no other way that we can have a process and a nation that we have without going and bending our knee to the Creator, however you understand him. But the bottom line, our founding fathers brought the Bible, and they bent their knee there, and they believed that liberty was given to them as a gift from God. And as long as they would behave and focus in on the principles of God, did the best they could to do the right thing, that God would bless them for it, and they'd be blessed with liberty, which is the unalienable rights that we have. And that's what we'll bring forth all the time. As soon as we take our eyes away and do not acknowledge God for the gift of liberty, we lose it. We come into the courts, we need to bring a sense of honesty, a sense of justice, a sense of mercy. Goodness, I tripped up on that. A sense of honor, justice, and mercy, okay? And those are the principles we've gotten from the Bible. And people get it from other religions also. That's why it's universal. Everybody understands that. We have to have that sense of honor. We have to have that sense of justice. We have to have that sense of mercy. And that comes from the Creator. And as long as we're obedient there, we have the blessings. The Constitution, the preamble says that that the purpose of government is to secure the blessings of liberty. Now, who blesses us with liberty? God, the Creator. And that's the bottom line. So that's what we do teach here, and that is the premise and the principles we act under.
Okay, so I guess that's yes. Next time I get on this call, I might get 45 minutes more of Christianity force-fed to me.
Well, yes, that's correct. Only because you brought the subject up. I have a friend of mine who is always telling me, John, will you please just stop preaching this Jesus stuff? And I would say to him, hey, give you his name.
Sure.
I said, I say to him, hey, Mike, Joe, Fred, whatever his name is, because I don't want to say his name. I said, look, I'm only talking about him because you keep bringing him up. You already told me you don't want to hear about Christ. I'm not going to bring him up to you. But I'll guarantee you next week when we get together, we're going to talk, and you're going to bring up this subject, and then you're going to tell me to stop talking about Christ again when you bring it up all the time. We wouldn't be talking about this whole process until you came onto the line right here. All we do in the beginning is we acknowledge God, we read a little scripture, and then we move on. We talk about principles.
I have not been on this call when there hadn't been at least a half hour of Christian dogma force-fed to me.
Well, I don't know. Where was it tonight?
Last week was the first time that there was no, you know, it seemed like it was all about business, and I was so happy.
Well, you're wrong on that one. You're wrong on that one there because I read the Beatitudes last week.
Let me speak.
Well, I read the Beatitudes last week because you're wrong. You're not telling the truth, or you wouldn't hear early enough. We read the Beatitudes last week. We went straight to the Word of Christ.
I don't get on every minute of every call.
Okay.
So
well, that's what I do. We only do it in the beginning. We acknowledge God in the beginning. That's what we do. Look, someone told me before, they said, why don't you actually start your program 5 minutes before the program so we don't have to record or get the God stuff into it? Well, I disagree, and I reject that. No, that's what I'm going to put God first, and maybe by his blessings we may be able to discover liberty again and not have to go to the hell that this world is facing. Only by the grace of God are we going to accomplish that, and certainly not by my actions.
90% of this world is Christian, John. If there's a problem in this world, you might want to look at Christianity.
Well, that's not true.
75% of the planet claims Christianity as the primary religion.
No,
what is going on here?
Okay, well, I disagree with that. But anyway, do you have any other questions or comments? Because I don't want to talk about religion anymore.
I just ask that if you bring something religious up, that you make it acceptable to everyone. So
I do.
We can include everyone so we can build a movement where people feel welcome. That's all I
tell
for.
Everybody they need to go to their prayer closet and talk to their God however they know him. That's what I say. Okay? But in any event, I appreciate it.
I don't need you.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Appreciate it. Have a good night. God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay. Emmett. Gerard.
Yeah, man. All right. How you guys doing?
We're doing.
Yeah, man.
Rod,
okay.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you guys can hear me clearly?
Ahead, Emmett.
Okay, great. You know, morality. No one has the high ground on morality, and doesn't matter what institution.
I just recognize your voice. It's Lamont. I see.
Yeah, it's Lamont. I don't know what Emmett came from.
I see E-M-M-T.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, happy holidays to the over 100 or 200 callers on the radio or on the talk show. Happy holidays and all that. But morality is not something that should be dictated by dogma. I mean, there's Christianity, there's Judaism, there's Islam, and which are all man-made constructs to give man a blueprint for morality and to drive force. Some say that came all from comedic sciences back in the day of Cush, Sumeria, Babylon, comedic sciences. That's all I want to talk about that. It could be called dogma, or you can have it close to your heart and keep it close to your heart with much respect. As far as the other comments are made about this judge or clerk to shift the subject who tampered or who misplaced or who deliberately took out the paperwork or refused to take the paperwork, that's a federal fine up to 3 years in jail, 3 years in prison under Title 18, Section 2071. So that person who's experiencing the clerk messing around with this paperwork or perdente, she's facing federal fines and prison sentence for 3 years doing that. Third thing, this whole Obama thing, Obama is like one since Reagan who's been messing around and could be held in contempt and be, held for treason for putting the country the way it is. Look, Ronald Reagan fired 60,000 air traffic union workers because they wanted to sleep. And he did that in the 80s. My relative, my father, worked for them, got laid off. So let's try to keep this all in proportional how, we have this movement or this initiative. I call it Universal Law Initiative or Human Rights Initiative or Natural Law Initiatives, and see how we frame ourselves. We go after the weakest link is Obama. I didn't see anyone coming around when Dick Cheney, George Bush Sr. Were doing their criminal activity. I didn't see anybody come around when Bill Clinton was doing his criminal activity. And, just keep it in perspective. From Reagan, things have been bad. So let's keep that in mind. And Obama, his father, people say his father was Frank Marshall Davis, not this guy from Africa. So I don't, that's point number four. And this file on demand, that's a good suggestion for as item five. The file on demand is good to put that so you can waive your federal court cost fee of $400. That's something that everybody can do. There's a case going down in North Carolina two cases. One had a foreclosure that was totally fraudulent, didn't get any signatures. The sheriff didn't know what to do, but they still went on like a fax or electronic order from the court to issue a foreclosure, which should never have even happened. I want to ask you about the case where the quo warranto and the writ of mandamus was removed from this person who was a National Liberty Alliance member in North Carolina. I think it was North Carolina or Alabama, right, Alabama. What is the follow-up with that case where the clerk or some administrator took the quo warranto?
No. It wasn't the quo warranto. The person was a member, and they have their own court case going on down in the city, and they've been fighting in the court for about a year. He had put quite a few papers into his court case, and they removed all his papers. He went and checked. Matter of fact, I said to him, I said, you got to go check to make sure that your papers are all there. And he said, yeah, I just did. And he said that they were gone. And he found out that one of the clerks told him Prudente had actually removed it. Now, Prudente knew, from various reasons we have knowledge of this, that they knew that he was one of us. So there was another game going on for that, too. But the bottom line is they do this all the time. But no, the quo warranto, we have no word of the quo warranto being removed anywhere.
Well, yeah, we remember three weeks ago, there was a guy from Alabama who called and said that one of his friends had his paperwork tampered with, and they sent back a parcel back with the judge's correspondence and the letters. And you said you have to see it. You wanted to scan it. You wanted to scan it and send it to you. It was they sent judge's correspondence letters back in the same envelope and sent it back to his own address. You called.
Yeah, we have gotten that kind of thing on a few cases from judges, but not from the courts themselves.
Oh, okay. So whatever happened to that some administrator?
I haven't heard back on that. I haven't seen it. Maybe something came through and I missed it, but I have not heard any follow up on that.
Okay.
Things, and I'm trying to keep up on all of it. And people got to keep up on it themselves, and they got to keep focused. And that's why we have the meetings to teach people what they need to do, because obviously I can't do it all. People have to learn what to do and then do it themselves. So whatever – I haven't seen it to be able to use it to teach people what to do in that fashion at a state meeting or something.
Gerard, and you guys know that's a violation – of USC, United States Code, Title 18, 2071, and a whole bunch of them, where they can't take the paperwork. That's a federal fine. 3 years up in jail, 3 years in jail, or fine, or both. Prudente, Alabama.
Of course. But trying to get the justice going in an unjust system is the problem. And the question is, do we want to focus our time to go after her at the moment, or do we want to continue to push the process to get into the courts? We've already indicted her. She's under indictment. And trust me, when we get in, that indictment's going to hold water. It's going through. All eight Supreme Court justices down in New York City here in New York, which is the eight highest judges in New York State, who are responsible to make sure that the courts operate with a sense of justice. That is their duty. And they've been making sure that the courts are operating under RICO with injustice. And they've been indicted under RICO and many other charges, and we will hold them to that at some point, and the jury is going to decide what their fate is.
Well, I will say this. These pencil neck geeks who are in the courtroom, you're going after the judge. I think you should go after the juggler, and the juggler is the Bar Association and the prosecutors, the pencil neck geek prosecutor.
That's part of the thing, too, but look, that takes care of itself. With what we're doing, that will take care of itself, and it's the wrong focus, because by going after them, it's not going to get us in the courts. We have to get the people who are preventing us from getting into the courts, and those people are the judges. Those are the ones preventing us from getting in, and so those are the ones we have to go after. The prosecutor is a no problem. Once we control the judges and bring them back under the common law and the people get into the courts and make sure common law is the process of the day, then the prosecutors and the Bar Association is a no-brainer. They fall into order and they fall away. I'll tell you what, lawyers are going to be looking to leave the bar if they're going to want to practice law, because if they try to bring statutes in, what good is that going to do them? If they try to bring the tactics of the bar, they're going to lose every case in a common law case, common law court. They're not going to be able to get anywhere.
But you're totally right. But you have to be aware that the prosecutor can just, you know, they can indict a ham sandwich and they can intimidate
the sheriff. They
intimidate the sheriff and they also intimidate the local county police department, which is separate from the office of sheriff and the department of sheriffs.
Lawful duty for that, though. It's not their job to indict anyone. It's the job of the grand jury to indict. That just tells us everything about that guy. When he says, I can indict a ham sandwich. No, I'm sorry, sir. You can't indict nobody. You can bring your case before the grand jury, and the grand jury might decide to indict that ham sandwich. And who the hell do you think you are to even make a statement like that? Who made you king? You see, look, we better get back and realize what they're saying when they say that. First of all, they're making a mockery of the justice system by saying that, because they're letting you know I can do whatever the hell I please and I can put you in jail if that's what I want to do because I'm that powerful. That's what he's saying to you to begin with. Second of all, he's saying that the grand jury is irrelevant because they're going to listen to what I have to say because I'm going to twist their arm and pull that little hook in their nose and make them do my will. Just like the judge, you get into court, he's going to pull the ring on the noses of all of those jurists because he's going to make them do exactly what he wants them to do. Okay, so the government has become the judge, the jury, and the prosecutor and the executioner. They are everything. It's all one-sided, and that's the problem. And of course, everyone here with National Liberty Alliance that is working towards this understands that problem. Okay, but once we get in, all of that falls apart. Look at what you tell me. You tell me what. What lawyer in their right mind would remain with the Bar Association under shackles, okay, once they walk into a court that is a common law court and they realize it for the first time? Who's going to stay with the bar? They can't make no money with the bar because they can't win one case.
Once that British accredited regency gets shut down and the judges get put on notice or they go to jail or they straighten up, or you send them to a concentration camp vis-a-vis a golf course, vis-a-vis a country resort, something they're comfortable to, so it's for their social status. Leave them there, man. I don't care who's on the phone line. They need to be phoned and detained.
That's not for us.
I know, but there has to be some enforcement behind this, man. Go for the juggler, man.
Well, yeah, there is enforcement. We have enforcement. You just haven't seen the picture yet. But the bottom line is this. Okay, we are not the ones who's going to decide anything on the fate of any judge. I know what I think should be done, but what I think should be done is irrelevant. What's going to be done is the people, when that individual, if they're brought before a jury, the jury is going to look and examine that person and what they done or didn't do and going to see what's true and what's false, and they're going to make a decision, and whatever that is, I'm good with it. That's up to the people. That's the people's job. Okay.
I hear you.
And one of the things we do teach here and we talk about, as hard as it may be, okay, but we have to be under principles, we're here for mercy too. And we're here with, if the judge is willing to work with us and go forward, we don't care about his past sins. That's not our business to get involved with, because our business is to save the nation, to save the republic. So we got to keep going forward. So we're not on a witch hunt. Now look at Judge Joe and Judge Judy and all these other judges. They've injured a lot of people. And when those people bring up their claims to the court and to get before a grand jury, now that you got an injured party, now you got to deal with it. You see, that's where justice will come from. We don't have to seek it out. Justice will find itself. You know?
Right. I hear you. Listen, guys, I love you guys. I love what the work you guys are doing. I wish that more people would support, thousands of thousands of support, and I have your guys back. I have your back. And one last thing, you know, it's kind of strange that it's easy to get a Hawaiian area code and claim that you're Carmella or Kama, and then you sound like Jason from New Jersey. Now,
I personally know Jason, and I know Kalama pretty darn well. And
it sounds like they have the same voice. It sounds like they have the same voice, brother.
No, they don't. Kalama is from Hawaii, and I know him, and I know other people from Hawaii. You just may be catching the voices, not hearing them.
Yeah,
right. I can hear him, maybe because I know him well enough now. I can hear the difference.
It sounds funny to me.
And they're two different people. You know, you can get a call from someone that you know very, very well, and they can sound just like the person you think it is, but you can tell by their conversation who they are also. And from that perspective, I know their personality, so I know both of them that way too.
Right. Well, I took about 15 minutes of the time, less than 20 minutes, and I just want to keep that in mind. I think it's somewhat in poor taste for some individuals to monopolize this opportunity to speak when there's a queue of people who want to speak and talk to you about their grievances or their issues or their concerns. On that note, peace to everybody, and God blessings, and happy holidays.
All right. God bless you. Okay, Gerard, we'll take the next call. I think this would be the last caller. Let's see. It's getting late, but go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, Richard from Virginia, I think.
Yes, this is Richard in Virginia. Three things. I was wondering if you could cover quickly the priority of getting the letters to whoever, the sheriffs or whatnot. And the second question is, I was wanting to send some quo vadis to some, like the board of supervisors and some other people, but I was hesitant to do it until I had an NLA produced cover sheet. Is there a generic cover sheet that's not really aimed at any particular person, like a sheriff or whatnot? Just those two questions.
Yeah, you can send a quo vadis to anyone, a copy of the quo vadis to anyone. I'm not sure of any cover sheet to send with it. I would say if you wanted to send a copy of the quo vadis to commissioners or somebody, some councilman or whatever, you can just put a handwritten or typed letter on top of it and give them your thoughts and your feelings, and you want to share it with them and whatever, or just send a copy to them, whatever you want. The key is to get the copy to everyone. But, of course, we want to focus in on the primary targets first, and that, of course, is our sheriffs and marshals and all the people we've listed over and over again. We want to always focus in on those people first, and then get it to others.
Okay.
But you know what? Go into the group, the media campaign group. I'm sure they're discussing that there. And get into that particular group and get talking with them on that. And you'll get other people's ideas, and then you can all formulate what is best. You know, I know, and they're working, you know, if they're unsure of something, they don't want to misrepresent what we're really doing. So sometimes people aren't sure, and I know, they'll check with us. Sheila will check with me on to make sure that they're on point and they don't get off point. You know, there was someone who was doing something recently. I forget what I was discussing with someone. It might have been online tonight here. But they kept bringing up using National Liberty Alliance. And I said, no, it's not National Liberty Alliance. We're just the facilitator. It's the people. We the people. That's who it is. You can speak from the name of the grand jury if you want, and you get collectively together. Of your county or of your state, and from that perspective, or just we the people. We don't want to keep focus. We don't want to focus to NLA and put a limelight on NLA, and then of course that's a target also, because remember they're going to look for character assassinations. They're going to look for to assassinate the organization, if that's what you want to call NLA, and because they can't kill the message, they got to try to kill the messenger. Or the messengers, and so the more we push it back towards the people, we the people, you know, then they have to go after we the people, you know.
Because one of the things that I was talking with Curtis, our state coordinator, about the possibility of setting up programs where in our rural communities here in Central Virginia to have some seminars. Because the firehouses are available for non-political purposes, and
seminars on what?
On the Constitution and civics.
Okay. Well, we do have
get the word out, I was hoping maybe have a short video. I think Curtis's brother Mark was working on getting some things together. He's learning some things about the computer and making some discs and making a presentation. And in other words, to put some bait out there in front of people, try to get these people to spend the evening with us and hopefully to get more people on board.
Well, here's what I suggest. We have to get educated, and we're trying to – the most important education you can get is the education we're trying to push here on National Liberty Alliance.
Yeah.
We also have procedures and different things that we're going to need to have knowledge of, and we started to do some videos and we started to do some writings and stuff, but we haven't been pushing it because people haven't gotten through step one first, so we got to go through step one. But meanwhile, there are other things that we're going to be teaching people. For instance, how to orientate the juries. I mean, you know, people don't know what to do. They need some instruction and some framework to work off of, and we're going to create that. We've already started to create some of that already anyway, but we're going to create that and put it out there, and people will be able to go in there and understand what it is that we need to orient the juries of. And obviously, it's, you know, generally speaking, their duty as a jurist. And the principles that they have to act upon, and the vow that they're going to take, that every jurist must take. And so we get a day with them to really free them, not to incarcerate them. Whereas today, right now, the system is a puppet grand jury. They get a whole day to spend with people to brainwash them so that they do the will of mommy, daddy government, okay? Because they want these people to go to jail because there's money for it in them. In it for it, and there's maybe other reasons why they want these people in jail. So everybody, pretty much you go to court, almost everybody loses all the time. It's really pretty pitiful. It's pretty bad out there. So, but we got to be careful of personalities. We got to be careful, you know, some people starting to start teaching this or to teach that, and they get them to spend their times to come in or once a week here or there. Well, look at, that's not where you belong right now. Right now, you need to be, if you got time to spend during the week, get over there and start stuffing envelopes. Get over there making copies and get it out to other people. Read and understand and learn that. Get together as a group, on a, you know, as a state group, and if you want to discuss a little bit the paperwork that we wrote after your 15, 20 minutes or half hour meeting, those who want to stay behind for another hour to discuss the papers and to dig deep into the meat there, because there's a lot of authorities, there's a lot of footnotes, a lot of things to learn from that. That's the real rubber meets the road right there in that paperwork. And also, of course, in our civics course, you know, spend the time on that civics course. And we've got the jurist page, the jurist documents page. There's lots of articles there. People need to be reading them. They need to understand. It's primer for what job you're going to be doing. It's primer for freedom. It's primer for liberty. It's primer most necessarily for the administrators, those people who want to become the administrators. They have to have this knowledge. And knowledge is achieved just by exposure. You know, we don't have to worry about remembering anything. Become exposed to it enough, and all of a sudden it falls out of your mouth because it's just the way it is. So, but, you know, if people – also, we don't know what people are going to teach in constitutional courses. You know, we're very careful on the work that – the stuff that we brought together, we're very careful in choosing what we've chosen. And, you know, there are much more deeper courses in the Constitution. I'd like to produce one myself. Maybe there's others that are capable of doing it, but we want to make sure that whoever's teaching the Constitution, that they really do understand the Constitution, that they really are capable of teaching it, because some people get up there and they'll take you down a different kind of rabbit hole, and you don't want to get lost in the discussion of fiction. After all, fiction's going to go away because fiction is illegal. We certainly don't want to use fiction. You know, we have to ignore it and say it has no reality. Give it no merit, make it go away. And that's how we beat the fiction, because it's not real. Well, we expose it for what it is, fraud. So do be careful on where you spend your time. If you got time to spend, for sure, let's spend it on winning back America. Let's get together with your group in the state, doing the things that are necessary to get the work done and getting your civics course done, which is a prerequisite to become an administrator. And then there are other things that you will need to learn. And we'll start getting that out as soon as we can. There's also a 30-day process, which will be an education in itself once we get into the courts. We're going to lead the nation on the process, and everybody should be copying and doing the same thing. After all, united we have to be. And after the end of that 30 days, you're going to find yourself sitting in the county courthouse and where the rubber meets the road, making the real decisions on what needs to be done for America from your perspective, right there at the grassroots level. which is justice, justice in the courts. You bring justice in the courts, you will have justice in all of the elected positions in America, even out there in Washington, drop the D.C.
Well, see, that's been my point, is I'm 100% behind you in the NLA. Is I don't want to step outside of our mission statement, and I really don't want to do anything that would detract from what NLA is trying to do. And I certainly understand about what you're saying about stuffing envelopes, because I just spent this weekend stuffing envelopes and
there you go.
In the mail. So we're already doing that, and maybe I'm just looking too far down the road too fast. So.
There is a lot to learn, and look at life is learning. Once I discovered that I enjoyed studying things, I haven't stopped, and it's lifelong. It's what life is. Keep learning things.
So there's a lot to learn here,
and we'll learn it, and we'll be pouring out a lot more information. We got tons of stuff up there, and we're gonna. Like I said, I'm going to try myself. I'd love to be able to sit to give a course on the Constitution. I've been studying it long enough. I think if I can get, a couple of weeks of deep research into it, some more, I think I can put together a nice course on the Constitution and really dig deep in each phrase across, in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Included with that, of course, is the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, and the Declaration of Independence, because all three of those documents are most important. But there are others also who could do that. You know, we need to get a book out there, a textbook just for school. Children in school need to learn.
Yes, that's something that definitely needs to be done, because all of that's been removed, especially since 1950.
Get a really good one that we can trust, and I think we the people need to really examine whatever it is that goes into the school and push it very hard across the America, that this is the book. We need to create one, and we need to say this is the one that children really need to know, because we really have to set them free. They have to understand a sense of duty and what it is that they have, that's they're responsible for as a human being here in America, no less, in order to maintain liberty's light and dare I say, live under the will of God.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good talking to you. I appreciate the opportunity. I hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. Godspeed. Okay, I guess we'll take one more. Gerard, you still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. You take this one. It's 702 number, 742.
Yes, I'm here. Nothing like a long wait. Yes, I enjoyed the wait. I enjoyed hearing what everybody had to say. But most importantly, recently, there's been a few things I've done in my own life that most average people would never do. And what I've learned to do throughout my entire life, I had to unfortunately learn when I was only a teenager. And I had learned how to use my private sovereign rights without using any public British agent registered attorney in the public realm, in the public martial law courtroom. Why did I have to do this? I had to do this because of the amount of deceit and fraud that everybody here has spoke about ever since, literally since the 30s, because if anybody truly understands when the fraud truly took place, as what everybody's already spoke about, and that's the British Agent Registry and the British Crown, and who their public de facto government is truly working for, and throwing out the Constitution out of the window, out of any public martial law courtroom. And so, as a teenager, I was forced to educate myself because of also another issue, which was medical fraud, that of course was never disclosed, and I was questioning things as a very young child forward, and I was never getting the answers to the questions, so I chose to take it upon myself to study both law and medical, and understood the real truth about who is only the capable or competent individual in upholding their own private constitutional rights inside any public martial law courtroom. And everybody on the phone should understand one thing, and that is that any city or county courts are not, quote, courts of record. So if they're not courts of record, no one has any jurisdiction to even enter their courtrooms, because unless and until complete due process of law and due process procedures is adhered to by all statutory commercial code at the state and federal level, then and only then can any city or county jurisdiction have any form of jurisdiction against we the people. And I speak from real life experience because of what I was forced to do under the age of 18. And I did not know how to write the lawsuit. I am not ashamed to say that. But I'm very proud enough to say that under the age of 18, I learned the difference between public versus private. And in so doing, I had made a decision after I needed to get original medical records released from a very young age until the date of my 18th birthday, in which a hospital system was denying to provide to me, informing me that those records did not belong to me, that they belonged to the hospital system. And because I was under the legal age limit of 18, and the only individuals that had any jurisdiction under the age of 18 were my parents, and I knew my parents could not bring back the past, and I confirmed it by asking them one day, and they told me they would not do it. So I just ignored, you know, having a conversation with them, because I didn't want to get into an argument. But in a nutshell, I made a decision, and I had called over 100 law firms. I would only request to speak to the CEO of a law firm, and I verbatimly told each law firm CEO my age, 17 and a half, and that I did understand up to that point the difference between public versus private, and that I understood that no public attorney can uphold their own client's private constitutional rights in any public courtroom, as well as they were even unable to inform their own client that they could not uphold their own private client's constitutional rights inside any public martial law courtroom. So, I took me over 100 phone calls before I could find a CEO that would meet with me and a friend that I took with me as a witness. Witness is just as good as a notary. And I informed all individuals that I spoke with, which was only one after this meeting took place, that this public meeting that is not public, it would be a private meeting, and the meeting that would take place under the lawful age limit of 18, that this divulging of any information of who I met with and or any entity in which I met with, I would be more than happy to sign a non-disclosure.
Excuse me. Let me ask you, what is the point, though? Where are you heading to? Can you shorten it up?
By the way, I
never got your name. What's your first name?
Ron.
Ron. Okay, Ron. Yeah, where are you heading to with this? Because it's a long story.
The long story short, we need to stop being the defendants in any case, in any part.
We absolutely agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, we agree with that. We have to. If you're in court, you must be the plaintiff, absolutely. And it's very simple to become the plaintiff in any court case, because every court case they bring against you is not a court of record, and you open a court of record, you automatically become the plaintiff. But in the case of what we're doing, we're neither plaintiff nor defendant. We're the owners of the country telling them what needs to be done and demanding that it be done. So that's the perspective we're coming through from the grand jury's end.
Well, and the thing with I've never had to write a lawsuit, but I am going to be asking for a team of people because of the documents in which I've served when an issue happened this past year in, of all lovely cities, of Sin Cities of Las Vegas. And I was not only illegally detained, but I was physically attacked by three officers when all I simply was requesting was one or two things, and that was one, burden of proof of already being lawfully served, a lawfully signed notarized warrant, or B, produce the lawfully signed notarized warrant previous to putting any handcuffs on the individual human being speaking and detaining me. And I sat there on the road for 45 minutes with the first officer and waited patiently because he called for backup. And then I repeated the same story to the other two backups, and all three kept, I repeated it at least 10 times, same statement that I requested, and all three denied that due process of law, and all three officers charged at me. And when they did, they tackled me to the ground, literally. I was like roughly 50 feet away and standing there, mighty, you know, completely away from everybody. And they all three just literally charged at me, tackled me to the ground, and broke my left rib and tore my right rotator cuff and demolished my glasses. And also, the funniest part was who shows up into the jail. The Federal Bureau of Investigations, to Federal Bureau of Investigations, and this is their comment to me. Their comment to me was, "We know what you're doing," and I said, "That's correct, you do. So I'm hereby putting you on notice that the only time that you have any jurisdiction within the County of Clark and City of Las Vegas is when the sheriff of the county has been in complete dereliction of duty, violations of oath, treason, perjury, and fraud, and lack of proper education of complete full disclosure of due process by all public city officials that he is responsible for overseeing." And
so where are you heading with this, though? What was the bottom line?
Well, the bottom line is they never produced the warrant while I was detained. Number two, because they could not provide the warrant, then there was no valid warrant, and so therefore I served them with a direct and constructive notice while I was detained of a RICO tort fraud with a case that was never overturned, Trezavant versus Tampa, Florida, who won over $1.5 million per day for unlawful illegal detainment. That's just for the detainment.
And this is a case that you've won through this process, or no?
Well, no. As I said, I never in my life have ever had to write a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle if you're fighting it.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they saying?
Well,
what's their conclusion of the matter? Are they saying we don't care about any of those things? We're taking you to court and we're going to go after you for A, B, and C?
They already took me to court. What every citation that I've signed, listen closely, the citations that I signed, I printed the words under duress underneath my signature, nullifying my any form of contractual rights to contract with any public servant at any level of any jurisdiction of our country. So every person can now be both personally as well as professionally held accountable. We must sue in both ways, not one. We must hold the individual who took the oath personally responsible, and then as well sue the professional capacity. It has to be in both jurisdictions, not one, because it's the person who took the oath. And I never had to write one in my life. I only had to do it one other time, and that was when I was 18. I'll be turning 50 next year. But I, with the proper documentation, everybody's been served, and that's why they could only hold me for the maximum time frame, because I never posted bond intentionally, because as soon as you post bond, you enter the public dominion. I never entered the public dominion. I never posted bond. They never produced the warrant. And they never produced burden of proof of due process. Nothing was ever properly done.
Right. Well, it's going to be, as you know, it's still going to be an uphill battle, and you need to educate yourself and do the best you can. And you can connect with a group, you know, within the National Liberty Alliance. There, we have another group called Courtroom Observers. They help each other, and sometimes you'll get people there that can maybe teach you some things on how to write papers and stuff. But the key thing is support in the courtroom, and that's what you're going to need. But anyway, with that, we're going to end the program because we're way beyond our time. Appreciate the call.
Yes.
And Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. God bless everybody. Have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you on the other side. And we'll take it from there. And don't forget, we have a coordinators meeting this week for all coordinators. Please be there. Good night. And everybody try to get involved. So, good night.
Good night.
Have a wonderful holiday.
Take care. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.